So one of the jurors in the Derek Chauvin trial gave an interview yesterday morning. In the interview, she said, I was worried that everybody would be mad or, you know, no matter what the verdict was. And I said, this is close as we're going to get to an admission that the riots played a role. Later in the afternoon, another interview came out where she was straight up like, I didn't want to go through riots and destruction again. And I was scared someone would come to my house in retaliation. And I'm like, wait a minute. That's dramatically different. That's an outright statement. Because you ain't seen no Trump supporters going around burning things down over the Chauvin verdict. We know what she was scared of. And so this is, I got to say, this is going to be their appeal. They go to a judge. They say, look, here's what the jurors were thinking. They should have sequestered the jury. They should have moved venue. And we're going to talk about this. We got a bunch of other stories. We're going to talk about a lot of wokeness in movies. And we're going to do it. We're going to talk about The Falcon and Winter Soldier again. Because I just watched the finale and it is not woke. It is pro-America. And I thought it was great. It's strangely pro-nationalist and anti-Antifa. It's just so weird to see people ragging on it and thinking it's far left or whatever. But we'll talk about it because it's deliciously centrist. Now, I could do all that work. I'm going to take the night off because we got someone here who can handle it for me. We got Michael Knowles, so...
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here. Great. You know, I think I saw like 1.5 of Marvel movies once, so I think I'm an expert. I can pontificate on the whole universe. And I haven't seen the movies you're talking about, but I'll just talk about it. It's fine. That's never stopped me before.
I think that's indicative of the cable news, you know, pundit class. So you should be fine.
That's great.
You'll get a job at CNN, no problem. They'll be like, I like what this guy does. He doesn't do any research and then talks. It's perfect for CNN.
That's like me.
We got
It's like Ian.
What Marvel movies did you see? Marvel movie and a half.
So I saw, I had to go see the Endgame movie. My friends dragged me to that. Yeah. I saw it. I didn't like it, but I saw it. And I saw part of one of the Captain Americas, and it was actually pretty good. It was the winter one,
Winter Soldier.
I saw that one was okay. But generally speaking, there are a few superhero movies I like. I liked Dark Knight. I liked Logan. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, they're not really superhero movies, right? Those are kind of the exceptions. Logan's just a Western, basically.
Yeah.
So I'm not I was thinking. I'm not like a real cool guy, you know, like I don't see all the cool Marvel movies. I don't wear a beanie. I was going to wear a beanie today.
You should.
So the problem, all right, I'll just show it. This is not going to look good. My head was not built for a beanie. So when I put it in kind
over
of
your headphones,
I kind
over
of my, yeah, I want to don't, my head.
It's a MAGA beanie.
It looks, I know, I love that.
Seamus' fault.
I could turn it into like a headband, like an 80s headband, otherwise my head just looks like a peanut. So that's it. I can't be a cool guy and I've accepted my lot in life.
All right.
I feel like I derailed what you were going to say. You're not a cool guy, but something cool or, education.
No, that was it. That was all of it. That was the whole point. Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
There's Ian, and then there's me in the corner pushing buttons. This is going to be a really fun show. I'm excited for our cultural commentator here.
This should be great. So before we get started, go over to timcast.com, become a member, and get access to exclusive members-only segments. You just go to the website, you click members only, it should be very easy, and then you see this thing over here, it's like, hey, look at that, you can become a member. We're working on making the site, getting new payment options and everything, but for the time being, so, you know, here's how you do it. You then go over to click members area, and you'll see we got a bunch of really awesome segments. I've been shouting out the segment we did with Charlie LaDuff, because, you know, Charlie was this really funny guy, he's a great guest, he's very smart, he's got a ton of integrity, everybody was like super stoked to see him on, he's this amazing reporter. And then we do this bonus segment with him, and all of a sudden he gets like real somber, and he's like, let me tell you some of these stories about, you know, being on the ground during 9/11. Man, he told me some stuff that sent chills down my spine of what some of these journalists and reporters do. No joke. So go to TimCast.com, check out stuff. And I think we'll you're around for a bonus segment, yeah? We could do it.
I'll be around all night. I got nothing else.
Nothing else going on?
I got a drink and a cigar waiting for me at the hotel. Oh, otherwise,
excellent.
I'm yours.
Nice.
Well, let's talk about this this story. I'm sure many people are probably already familiar with this because this actually came out yesterday afternoon. But I thought it was important enough to kick off the conversation. And I'll just say, I mean, we were already having a pretty crazy philosophical conversation before things got started. But let's talk about, you know, Black Lives Matter, these riots. For those that haven't seen the news, we have this from KARE11. Quote, I wish it didn't have to happen. Alternate juror reflects on Derek Chauvin trial. Now, the first and most important thing is she didn't know she was an alternate. She was in the trial the same as everyone else, treating it exactly the same as any other juror. It was only once they announced deliberations, he said, juror 96 and juror, you know, so-and-so, you are our alternates. You can go. And that's when she was like, okay. So her mentality, I believe, is indicative of the views of many of the other jurors. However, to be fair, this is the juror who lived in Brooklyn Center where the Dante Wright riots were happening.
Yeah.
She literally had to drive through the riots mm-hmm. on the way to court. We have this, so this is an interview, and we have this, let me just read. Ragus, the journalist says, quote, "Did you want to be a juror?" And the juror says, "I had mixed feelings. There was a question on the questionnaire about it. And I put, I did not know. The reason at the time was I did not know what the outcome was going to be. So I felt like either way, you're going to disappoint one group or the other. I did not want to go through rioting and destruction again. And I was concerned about people coming to my house if they were not happy with the verdict." Do you think this lady reasonably feared Trump supporters or conservatives rioting and showing up at her house?
I think she feared insurrectionists. Yeah. And I know that we're supposed to believe that Trump supporters are the insurrectionists, but we did see an insurrection last year. We saw it go on for months. We saw it go on not just in one city or two cities. It went on around the country. Didn't just target government buildings. It targeted private businesses and private citizens, resulted in deaths, arson, terrorism. What else do you call it? Terrorism is when you target civilians to achieve a political end. And look, I get why she feared it. I mean, there was a Babylon Bee headline right before the verdict came out. It said the jurors read their last will and testament before they, I mean, because of course. And so should this have led to a mistrial? Right. That was the big question.
Yep.
Maxine Waters calls for riots. Joe Biden later on.
I'm sorry. I've interrupted. Maxine yes. Waters incited insurrection. Carry on.
Yes, I'm sorry. Incited an insurrection. Joe Biden, same thing. He put his thumb on the scales for the jury, and ultimately they go to convict him because they wouldn't rule a mistrial. You remember the judge said, "Well, hey, this is bad. You know, I wish Waters didn't do that, but anyway, it's okay. They're probably not reading the news, so we're not going to have a mistrial. But I bet you got something on appeal." So what he's saying when he says, "I bet you got something on appeal," he's saying, I should declare a mistrial, but I'm too cowardly because I don't want them to burn down my house.
Yep.
And so here's my only point on it is, okay, this juror comes out and says, yeah, I was terrified of the mob killing me and burning down my city. Why is the judge on the appeal going to feel any differently than the judge during the trial, going to feel any differently than the jurors? Everyone's afraid of this terrorist left-wing mob because they not only are making the threats, they're credible threats because they already did it and they already got away with it.
It's terrorism, and the funny thing is they're bragging about it on Twitter.
Yeah.
There's a meme right now. So I tweeted something like, I said like, holy S, you know, and a quote from the lady saying, I didn't want to go through the riots. And some leftist posted a meme where it's, you know, the guy sweating and the two buttons.
Yeah.
And it said, violence doesn't solve anything. The riots yeah. caused the Chauvin verdict. I'm like, you're encouraging yeah. the right to get violent?
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to tell people not to get violent because you don't want violence. And here you have the left gloating and bragging that they engaged in acts of terrorism.
Yeah.
I'll tell
successfully.
You what's scary, though, is I guess, for one, I don't really think it's a conservative and liberal thing. Mm. I think the issue is I often describe it as politically initiated and uninitiated. Mm. So why is it that, you know, I'm a fairly moderate kind of, you know, left-leaning libertarian type, and we're laughing and agreeing? It's because we both know true facts.
Yeah.
There's probably some things we disagree on in terms of what we think may be real, yeah. but as individuals who are discerning of the news and seeking out the truth, we both know certain facts.
Yeah.
The riots exist. They terrify people. It's for a political goal. We might disagree on policy, yeah. but we agree on what's happening in this country. But most of these liberals and these people who are voting for Democrats have no idea. Hmm. They don't pay attention. So,
in their defense, by the way, Tim... Let's just take that story that happened, 2 days ago in Columbus where the cop shot the girl who was stabbing the other girl.
About to stab.
I'm sorry. Teenage yeah, about. Knife. It was just all well and good. That kind of, you know, you're a kid. You.
There's no way to know if she was really going to stab.
You don't know. It's a little innocent yeah. shanking between friends. And so if you were just a regular American, right, a regular kind of liberal American, you don't watch your show, you don't watch my show, you're, you know, maybe you don't watch podcasts. Maybe you watch network news, which is still the way millions of Americans get their news. And you watch NBC and you watch Lester Holt's broadcast, the nightly news. You would not have seen the knife. They edited out the knife. They played the clip. The girl is about to shank the other girl. They freeze the frame but keep the audio going, so the knife is out of the frame.
Wow.
And all you hear is bang, 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 bang. The girl goes down. And then in the news report they say, and the police officers say she was holding a knife. A knife was later found on the ground. No,
and they show a picture of the knife on the ground.
On the ground.
Yeah,
on the
yeah.
ground. So it's not their fault that they're being lied to.
So I think I talked about this last week. There was a clip from Mike.com. Yep. All right, I'm at a Trump rally in Janesville, Wisconsin. This is back in like 2015 or 2016. This young woman was arguing with an older man, and everyone's raucous and in a crowd, and she's yelling, "He touched my breast, he touched my breast." And the old guy has his hands up saying, "I did not touch you, I didn't touch you."
Yeah.
She punches him in the face, and then someone else pepper sprays her. Mike.com added a flare as if they were doing an edit, because it was the weirdest thing ever. She goes, "He touched my breast, he touched my breast." And then the screen flashes white to cover up the punch, and then it shows her getting pepper sprayed, and the story they run is woman sexual, you know, teenager is sexually assaulted and then pepper sprayed by Trump supporters.
Right.
And I'm like, oh,
yeah,
man, that's the news we get.
And the problem is, you know, my pal Andrew Klavan makes this point a lot. When we read the news or we watch a news story about something that we know about, we can look at it and say, yeah, that doesn't sound right to me. No, I actually know that's not true. Now, I actually have my own lion eyes here, you know, and I knew that that was not true. But then when we get to another story where I don't know, Iran or something, right? Something I'm not an expert on. We just take their word for it. The thing we know about, we know they're lying to us, but then the rest, oh, who knows?
That's the Gell-Mann amnesia effect.
Yes.
Have you heard that's, so there's a guy who said he was going to name it after two smart people, so it sounds official. So I don't remember who actually coined the phrase, but. Man, it rings true. Iran is a really great example. When I see CNN say something like, you know, Hezbollah has done this, I just go like, I guess.
Yeah, maybe.
And then I watch them talk about the riots. I'm like, peaceful protesters burned down the city. And I'm like, it must have been peaceful.
Yeah, is Hezbollah good? I don't think that's the case. But who knows what they're lying about, you know?
Right, yeah. And so, especially when it comes to foreign policy. Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S.? With more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S., they have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code POOL at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code POOL at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code POOL. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply.
Yeah.
We get into wars because of it, because the American people are just, I guess I just trust it. And so that's kind of why I think the easiest example of this is true, the real political divide, or one, I shouldn't say the real, but this, one of the strongest is, do you actually pay attention to the worldly affairs? Because you and I will disagree on politics, but we agree on what's happening with the world, which allows us to, you know, applying a standard American moral framework, come to similar conclusions on what should or shouldn't be.
Yeah. And there's also, if you really want to get woke to the political scene, one has to recognize there is a difference between how the government is supposed to work and how the government works on paper and how the government actually works and the kind of real ruling establishment. And actually, the right wing is finally waking up to this a little bit. When, you know, for 20 years, the right wing talked about how there's the, you know, the public and the private and the government and business and, you know, public government bad, private business good. And yeah, maybe this woke multinational corporation is undermining our entire country and culture, but they're good. They're good. Company, give money to company, give tax cut to company, and government, even though the government is an expression of our own political wills through our elected representatives, we hope when it's working, bad, right? But now, what is Google? Is Google's a private company? No, we were, by squishy Republicans, we were told Google's a private company for a long time. That doesn't seem that private to me. When three billionaire oligarchs control the flow of information in a republic where speech is politics, right? It's the same thing. The way we govern ourselves is we persuade one another of things. If three companies are controlling that, that practically speaking is the government.
You know, I go back and forth on this sometimes depending on the news, depending on, you know, how it's hard to gauge whether we are winning or losing. And by we, I mean the people who believe in individual rights, free expression, and I guess...
I think we're losing.
Classic. You think we're losing?
I don't want to bring down everything here, but
there was a funny comment earlier. Someone in the chat said they saw Michael in the title and they were hoping for Malice, but they got Knowles instead.
Real nice.
They're like, Knowles
Shatter.
Is okay. It's okay.
Real nice, guys.
But you know, Michael Malice is of the opinion that we're winning.
Yeah.
That and there's good reasons to think so. Like YouTube just relaxed its rules on community guidelines and monetization. Some of them give people pause, like you're now allowed to show police brutality videos and monetize them, which is, you know, they think that's actually the other direction. It popularizes the myth of police going on hunting minorities and things like that.
Right.
But they also have now opened it up to, you know, more adult-themed content, to put it mildly, like news coverage, very serious, you know, issues, swearing even. And so maybe that's a movement in the right direction. I wonder, though, if some of the relaxation is just because the election passed.
This is why. The election's over. They're always really nice to us when it doesn't matter. Right. You know, but when it really does matter, I think we actually did see them cross the Rubicon during the shortly after the election, during the litigation, where some hipster Rasputin, this guy with the nose ring in Silicon Valley, deplatformed the duly elected sitting president of the United States. Regardless of what you think happened in the election, the guy's the president, and this oligarch took him out, and he could take him out. And it wasn't just him. They all worked in concert with one another. And I mean, this is actually a lot of the topic of my book, my second book, but my first book with words, which is called Speechless. And it's about this problem of free speech. What is it? You know, I think it gets back to your point, Tim, which is so right. The reason that I think we keep losing ground and we lose ground, and maybe they pat us on the head and they're nice to us when it doesn't matter, but we still keep losing, is because we are only thinking about ourselves. We're only thinking about this individualist, hyper-individualist ideology. We're only thinking about the debate as one between free speech and censorship, when I don't think it's that. I think it's a debate between competing sets of standards. And it actually leads us into a trap. This, I think conservatives fall for this trap. I think the left understands free speech way better than conservatives do. I think we kid ourselves when we pretend that we understand it better. And the trap is this. Political correctness tries to destroy the old order. That's all it wants to do. It wants to, all the old rituals, all the old, it wants to get rid of it. And conservatives react one of two ways. Either we go along with it. That's what the squishes do. And they say, oh, who cares? Oh, it's not a big deal. Actually, drag queen story hour is a blessing of liberty. Oh, no, yeah, whatever. You know, it's that kind of thing. And then, but the second way we respond, which I think we've probably all fallen into this camp at various times, myself certainly included, is we'll say, okay, no, I'm not going along. Because I'm a free speech absolutist. I'm a free expression, whatever, absolutist. And so no one can ever tell me that this is better than that or this is more true than that. I'm going to be able to do whatever I want. And so you disavow standards altogether. Either way, the radical leftists get what they want.
I think I am one of the worst possible things for conservatives in the long run. In that, and I've maintained this for years, so when I first started doing YouTube, the people at Google that I was working with were like their liberal, you know, liaisons and stuff. And I know a lot of people at Google.
Yeah.
And then eventually they started calling me a centrist. I was, you know, and they say, you know, you're changing. And I'm like, my videos from 2014 are of the same opinion. I did a video in 2014 about, you know, a segregated graduation ceremony. That was wrong. I think we shouldn't segregate.
Yeah.
My opinions are relatively the same. In fact, I've become more liberty-minded. Yeah. And actually, I took the political compass test. I'll actually move further to the left ideologically.
Yeah.
But they keep calling me. They first they say, Tim's a liberal. He's not a progressive. Then they say, he's a centrist.
Yeah.
Now they're calling me right-wing.
You're a fascist.
They don't call me fascist, right? This is why I'm one of the worst things for conservatives. I think the reason why YouTube likes what I do, and I have a good go of things, when they ban conservatives, they want to make sure that conservatives stay on platform. And so there has to be something that's semi-acceptable to some conservatives. There are a lot of people who are conservatives who, like, I disagree with Tim, but, you know, I'll watch his show.
Yeah.
But what happens when they get rid of Crowder?
Right.
Then the people who are on YouTube who remain will be like, I'll still watch Tim, but then they're going to get a more liberal viewpoint. That's rotating the wheel and spinning and pushing the Overton window to the left. I don't literally think I'm the worst thing for conservatives. I think we do good work here to try and be fair to everybody, but they're trying to rotate the wheel so that centrist becomes far right and actual liberals become conservative, and then
that is socialist. So perceptive. I mean, because basically what you're seeing happening in real time is what Reagan said. I didn't leave my party. My party left me. You're seeing that happen to you. But you're also, you're self-aware enough to realize they're doing it with you. actually are the evidence of that Overton window shifting. And well, that's the point, though, is the Overton window, right? Which is, I think that sometimes conservatives, and I've been guilty of this myself years past, we pretend that there is a thing, total, absolute, 100% free speech. That's the American way, isn't it? No, it never has been. It never will be. There have always been broad swaths of speech in America that you're not allowed to say. Sedition, fraud, fighting words. Why? Obscenity actually is a really big one.
George Carlin.
Seven
words you can't say on TV.
Seven words you can't say on TV. Now you have to say those words on TV. Yeah. But why were you not allowed to say those things? Because all of those things, fraud, obscenity, are speech that undermines speech, at least in the understanding of the Founding Fathers and, I think, of the smartest people on this issue for all time. In the 1950s, you'd get canceled for being a communist. Today, you will get canceled for not being a communist. There's always going to be some kind of canceling. There are always going to be things you can't say and you can't do. But look at how that has shifted. Look at the way that in the 1950s, if you burned an American flag, you might be taken up on the Smith Act.
What was the Smith Act?
Smith Act was an anti-communist act.
Right, okay.
But, you know, we've had these sorts of bills going back to the founding, not particularly with communism, but with all sorts of subversive ideologies. Today, if you could go out, you could burn a flag in the streets, and the left has gotten the conservatives to defend that, to celebrate that. Nothing more American than burning the American flag. That's a big cultural victory for the left.
But you know, here's the thing. I've always been a liberal, and I think people have a right to free speech. So long as it's their own property, they can burn it.
Yep.
Now, like I said, they're trying to call me a conservative.
Yeah, right.
The people on Twitter are like, Tim's a right-winger, you right-wingers. Now, the funny thing is, I got called left by a right-wing outlet and right by a left-wing outlet, and so I just like screenshot it and put it on Twitter, and I'm like, I have found the singularity. Like, people don't realize centrism exists, and they think centrism is like agreeing with the worst parts of, like, you know, the left and the right. Yeah. No, it's like agreeing that some people on the right have it right and some people on the left have some good points.
There's something very conservative, by the way, about centrism. Like, I don't mean I'm slightly to the right of Genghis Khan, but there's something really Burkean, something really conservative about centrism. It's actually what I tried to do this. This was kind of the beginning idea for my book, is I wanted to take the left-wing intellectuals seriously. Because, you know, we do this all the time on the right. We say, oh, you know, the critical theorists there, I hate them. Or Marx, or, you know, Gramsci, or whoever it is. Marcuse, right? But no one actually engages with them. And the thing about those guys, those radical left theorists, is they're super duper intelligent, which is why they've been so successful, and we keep losing.
You know, I love quoting Marx when I can to, like, prove points about, like, liberty, for instance.
Yeah.
To be honest, there's only one I can actually reference, and it's, under no pretext shall arms and ammunition be surrendered.
Yeah.
The working class should frustrate this by force if necessary.
Yeah.
And so I tweeted, under no pretext shall the right to keep and bear arms be infringed, with a picture of an M16 on a trans flag. Because I'm like, freedom, liberty, and guns.
There is no if Marx were alive today, he would be on the alt-right. There's no question about it. He would. I'm serious. I'm not even joking. I mean, he's going to be like a Biden liberal establishment neo-lib? I don't think so,
buddy. No, he was racist.
Yeah.
Right. And
he was, yeah. I mean, it's funny. He really didn't like the Jews, even though he was, you know. Yeah.
He's a racist, anti-Semite, who believed in owning guns. It's closer to alt-right than you're going to get anybody on the left. Actually, you know, we were talking about Seamus from Freedom Tunes because he was just here, but he has a very, very popular cartoon you may have seen where the woke left, desperate to stop the Nazis, use a time machine to bring World War II soldiers to the future.
Yeah.
And then when they try explaining to them what's happening, the soldiers, they're like, you know, our president is a fascist, and then they give him a brochure, and then the World War II soldiers go, oh my, what? Your president supports gay marriage? It's like the World War II soldiers were ridiculously conservative.
Yeah. Well, certainly by the, I mean, by the standards of today, like Will and Grace was ridiculously conservative.
Yeah, I know,
I mean,
right.
Because Hemingway describes this in Sun Also Rises. He's talking about how you go bankrupt. He says, how'd you go bankrupt? And the guy says, gradually, then suddenly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that, you know, we've kind of gone through this gradually period, which is, I don't know, the 60s, 70s, 80s. It seems to me like we are very much in the suddenly phase. I mean, just think about it. We went from Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton saying marriage is a sacred bond between a man and a woman to if you don't castrate your child, you're a bigot. Come on, trans the kids, bigot. We did that in like 6 years or something.
This is where I think an interesting thing happens. You're substantially more conservative than I am, but I, as a, you know, as far as traditional American liberal over the past couple decades, have a red line on what I think does and doesn't make sense. So I was a big fan of Tulsi Gabbard. And what did Tulsi Gabbard say? She said safe, legal, but rare when it came to abortion.
Right.
And so that was where the liberals were 10 years before. So something happened, and I think it has a lot to do with social media, where, well, it's a combination of things, but I do think social media played a huge role in the rapid leftization, or whatever you want to call it, of the establishment, to where, like, I voted for Obama the first time because of the war issue. I didn't vote for him the second time. I consider myself to be, you know, younger, anarchy, leftist, got older, kind of learned some things, and then was like, I'm a liberal. Yeah. Then I got older and I was like, actually, I should open my mind and listen to, you know, people of all different backgrounds. And I see these things happening with, like, I think Michelle Wolf is her name, the comedian.
Yeah.
Where she goes on her Netflix show and she goes, you get an abortion and you get, and I was like, that scares me.
Yeah.
Because, like, the argument that I understood growing up from a very liberal family was safe, legal, rare.
Yeah.
Like, it was supposed to be like a medical thing where your doctor is here to help you.
But you know why it changed. And I actually have sympathy for the left on this as to why it changed. Because everybody recognized that, you know, it's abortion is not a thing you want. You don't want more of it, right? I mean, everybody, even if you support legal abortion, you don't like go celebrate it.
They know.
But they do now. And it's because the legal and rare issue raised this question of what is an abortion. If it has any moral similarity to murder, then it shouldn't be legal. If it isn't morally similar to murder, then there's no reason for it to be rare. And I think they couldn't stand the kind of gnawing shame of that. And there's a lot of different places the shame could come from. And they couldn't, it had to be, never with the left do they merely want you to tolerate them. Never do they merely want you to accept them. You must affirm them. You must validate every single desire that they want. And so very quickly, on a whole host of issues, not just abortion, you go from, hey, I have this disordered desire, please just tolerate it, to, if you don't take your kids to watch me do this thing and you don't put it on Nickelodeon shows, then you're a bigot and there's no true equity in the world.
Or there was the dad in Canada who got arrested for not using the proper pronouns for his
child.
Yeah.
Well, way to say it.
Well, no, because I don't know what the actual gender of the child is, because depending on which source you read, they'll say something different. So, you know, you'll read the New York Times and it'll say the man's daughter, and then you'll read, say, the Daily Wire, and it'll say the man's son.
Yeah.
And so I'm just like, I
but you see, this is
trust, you know what I mean?
That issue to me is why it all is so important. The thing that drives me craziest are these conservatives who they're in that latter group of people with PC where they say, oh, come on, you know, it doesn't affect me. Do whatever you want. Just don't raise my taxes or whatever. It does. If there are very few people who are men who think that they're women or vice versa. Very, very few people. It's a social contagion also beyond the psychological issue. So it is growing, especially among younger people. But taking that aside, it's still a small number of people. If I can't make a claim about objective reality that you will respect, and you can't make a claim about objective reality that I will respect, in something as fundamental as the most basic distinction in human nature, who's a boy and who's a girl, then we can't communicate, right?
Right.
What is language? It's symbols that we use to refer to objective reality and try to shape the kind of world that we want to live in and recognize reality. If we cannot do that, there is no self-government. There is no logic to this place. It's just warring bands of interests.
The interesting thing about when it comes to, and this is a really obviously dangerous subject for YouTube, especially.
Yeah.
You know, it's like walking on ice because they're ready to just hit the nuke button.
Yeah.
But I was reading something about, I can't remember what it was. It was a year or so ago, about a world-class athlete.
Yeah.
Who had won some competitions. The individual used he, him pronouns, but was biologically female. Yeah. It completely altered the context of everything because, In certain sporting events, I can tell you who the world-class top athletes are.
Yeah.
There's probably the names of, there's probably several names in, say, the WNBA you've probably never heard of.
Yeah, probably more than several. Yeah.
Right. Well, then. I don't know if it was you tweeted that joke, and I tweeted the Family Guy clip. Maybe it wasn't you. Was it you?
I did see the clip. I forget if I tweeted it or not.
Yeah. Anyway, if you have, we'll use the WNBA as an example. LeBron James, particularly woke in many ways and pro-CCP. And we all know he's like the cream of the crop, the best of the best, they say. He commands, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars a year. Let's say you have, and again, I'm saying this with the utmost respect. I'm trying to explain a concept of linguistics and understanding of reality. Let's say you have a WNBA player.
Yeah.
Who is called the top of her league, the best of the best, commanding the highest salary in the league. And then the person comes out as trans. So in the encyclopedia, say Wikipedia, they change all the pronouns from she to he and him.
Yeah.
Now it says he commands the highest salary in the league. He won all of the greatest championships. And it really changes the context because now it sounds like they're actually above LeBron James.
Right. Right.
So I need to be able to understand the context. And these things matter.
Well, it matters to the very essence of the society. I mean, you love philosophy, and so there's this very shallow idea that, you know, you keep your religion out of my politics. Look, man, that's, to quote the dude, that, man, that's just your opinion, man, you know, so don't, we're just going to talk about taxes or whatever. No, all laws legislate morality. All human conflict, ultimately, is theological. You know, there's the Breitbart Doctrine, which is politics is downstream of culture. Culture is downstream of religion. Cult and culture, they come from the same root word. Ultimately, we're talking about first principles, who we are. The traditional understanding for our whole civilization everywhere in the world, certainly in this country, is that we are, you know, body and soul. And, yes.
I'll bring you back to one more root, and that's religion comes after moral frameworks.
Yeah, exactly. No, this is actually a perfect way to put it, as moral frameworks. If I'm going to explain human nature in the old way, I'd say I'm body and soul, right? And for the purposes of a lot of public policy, I might just be body, but not for all public policy. You know, why is sexual assault worse than any other kind of assault? Because we're more than just our bodies, right? There's a kind of human dignity that's being violated here. Okay, fine. That's to use the technical term, the hylomorphic view of human nature. There's the materialist view, which is just we're meat puppets. And then there's the transgender view, which is an ancient heresy. It's called Gnostic dualism. It's the idea that my true self has nothing to do with my body. So I might look like a dude. I got a deep voice. I got the Adam's apple, various other appendages. But if on some deep metaphysical level, I feel myself to be a woman, not only is it sort of complicated, you know, and I'm just a woman. Because my actual self has nothing to do with my body. You can't live in a society that simultaneously holds these contradictory views of what human nature is. You've got to decide.
Have you seen the Jack Dorsey thing I did with Joe Rogan?
Yeah, it was just absolutely magnificent.
Yes. I appreciate it.
Yes.
It comes up a lot, but I think there was like a very important point that I brought up to Jack or to Vijaya, and it's that when I said your rules are inherently biased against conservatives, they didn't understand this.
Yeah.
And then I said conservatives view the phrase misgendering differently from the way you view it.
Right.
And you can argue that you're in the majority. They can argue they're in the majority. How do you rectify that bias you have? If half the country votes for Donald Trump and the other half doesn't, it's fair to say that half the voting body that are active in politics believe that misgendering someone means to use pronouns that don't align with their biological sex.
Yeah.
So that's the essentialist view. Then the constructivist view would be the other way around, that misgendering is when you don't use the pronouns that adhere to their self-identification.
Yeah, yeah.
We right now have an infrastructure that's being built upon you as a conservative. Your worldview is considered wrong, amoral, or a fringe, even though I think when you look at the data, it's actually the majority of individuals. Which,
certainly.
Which why I go back to the politically uninitiated versus initiated.
Yeah.
My thing comes down to probably like more libertarianism in the small L sense, not the Libertarian Party, because you know, they get kind of kooky. In that, if someone comes to me and says, here's what I'd like to be called, I say, no problemo.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. Yeah. And I don't think that Twitter's argument for why they ban people who violate this policy is sufficient. I don't think YouTube's is, and I think it's causing serious damage, as you probably agree, to discourse and politics. The argument was that there's a high rate of suicide among trans people, therefore.
Yeah.
And my argument, it's not even that I'm arguing against the right of individuals to be respected. You know, I don't think everyone has a right to just have respect, but I do think society, my personal opinion is we try to give people the benefit of the doubt towards respecting them until they prove otherwise.
But it does raise this question, which is, and this is actually just as dangerous for society. What is the respect? It seems to me, what the conservatives are saying is, if I see a man who wants to be called a woman, and you call him a man, you're showing him respect because you're not treating him like a crazy person. You're treating him like someone who can understand reality, and you're just saying, look, this is how I see it, pal. It kind of looks like you're a man. And if you lie to him, then you're being very disrespectful. You don't lie to people that you have respect for. But I think on the left, the argument they're making is lies. In this case, even if we're going to all admit, you know, he's not really a girl, but it's nice because it's socially constructed. We should all do it. Lies are compassionate and the truth is cruel. And, you know, that's not a great premise for society to begin with. And it's one that I would certainly reject.
I think at the very least, it's exactly, you know, everything you outlined, the conservative view on why you're actually being respectful, it's exactly the problem with the rules these social media companies have.
Yeah.
In that they, you know, what I said to them was, you guys think you're like regular people, but you're not. You're billionaire Silicon Valley elites who are out of touch with this country.
Masters of the universe.
I'm not saying that you represent a tiny fringe faction or anything like that. There's a lot of people who agree with you.
Yeah.
But you don't understand that you have not spoken with a Trump supporter or a conservative to understand that half the country disagrees with you and probably more, but you've made rules. So what ends up happening is the more we use these digital spaces, the more we're filtering our worldview through theirs.
Yeah.
And to your point about losing, that's probably it.
It is, because I think what Twitter is saying, I mean, you absolutely wrecked them, and they're being so hypocritical and they're being so disingenuous a lot of the time. But the fact remains, there are going to be rules. Always have been, always will be, to every speech regime. There have to be. There just have to be rules to speech in the sense that if he is really he, then he isn't she. And if he is she, then he's really not he. And one of us is right and one of us is wrong. But we will if we're going to have any kind of society, we're going to have to agree on those rules. And what is being done now is, rather than having them develop over time, out of tradition, through the use of our reason, by applying reason to the natural world and our perceptions, what is being done is a handful of extremely radical people whose life experience is very different from all of ours are upending society right from under our feet, and there's nothing we can do about it because they own the platforms and they enforce all the rules.
And you got like Jack Dorsey, who sold Twitter. Basically, he only owns like 2 or 6% or something of Twitter now. And you've got companies like State Street BlackRock, these giant global investment firms that basically are running the show. And like you said earlier, sedition, like certain types of speech are illegal for a reason. And so free speech means we've all agreed we're not going to say certain things. And it's like they've taken on this role of arbiter that they want to decide for us that we can't say certain things because it's dangerous, that it will prevent actual free speech. But I don't think that's for corporations to decide personally.
not historically in our country, but that is what's happening now. And it's why I think the reason conservatives lose is because the left makes a procedural argument and they make a substantive argument. And what I mean by that is the left has a view of what free speech is in the abstract, and then they're going to enforce certain speech rules. The right has this kind of ahistorical, now we've adopted over the last 20 years, just like total free speech and there's no limits to anything. But we won't say what we should say. But free speech has no meaning to people who have nothing to say. Freedom of belief has no meaning to people who don't believe anything.
The reason I think it's not just conservatives who are losing, because obviously to you, I'm definitely not a conservative. To the right, I'm definitely not a conservative. To them, I don't, whatever, fine. Yeah. But we are losing. And whatever that we is, it's a combination of different factions in politics. But yeah. The reason is, well, I don't think you're interested in lying, cheating, and stealing.
Right.
I'm certainly right. not either.
Yeah.
I like enlightenment values. I like sitting down and having conversations with people. I believe in respecting. So for me, when it comes to, you know, pronouns or whatever, I give the benefit of doubt towards respect. I like to sit down and have conversations. I don't like to manipulate people into doing my bidding.
Yeah.
However, the issue I have with modern leftism as it stands is the authoritarianism of it, where they believe the moral framework of wokeness is might makes right.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with David Graeber?
No, I'm not. No.
David Graeber was a very famous anthropologist who didn't like that he was called the anarchist anthropologist. He was one of the influencers who ignited Occupy Wall Street at these meetings. And he passed recently. So, you know, rest in peace, David Graeber. He did a Twitter thread a few years ago where he said elements of the left have begun adopting fascistic ideologies. The idea that there's no truth but power and that might makes right.
Yeah.
That's my problem with wokeness.
Yeah.
That they're basically, there's no rules. I want to know what the rules are so I can respect you.
Yeah.
But they purposefully have no rules.
It's just the imposition is what matters. You know, this point is so important. So someone the other day, well, this happens every day, but the other day I responded, someone called me a fascist. And I pointed out, I said, I am way too reactionary to be a fascist. That is like small potatoes. And what I mean by that is, to your point exactly, fascism is an atheistic statist philosophy that basically just worships the exercise of state power. That doesn't work with my worldview because I think that there are some things that are true. I think there are eternal truths. There's an eternal moral order. But this is something that conservatives don't want to acknowledge. When I say they don't want to say anything, what I mean is this. You get the squishy types who say, well, look, you know, if we tell Drag Queen Story Hour that they can't twerk for kids at the library, then they might tell us we can't go to church on Sunday. And I say, like, first of all, they're already telling us we can't go to church on Sunday. But second of all, if you cannot distinguish between twerking for toddlers and going to church on Sunday, if you can't say one of those is better than the other one of those is better for, then you have lost your faculties of judgment, your moral conscience, which is the prerequisite for self-government. At that point, throw in the towel.
Well, I'll put it in a different way. Let's say I'm sitting in my arbiter's chair and I see a leftist say we should be allowed to have, you know, Drag Queen Story Hour. And then to my right is a conservative saying we should be allowed to go to church on Sunday. I say to you and your community on the religious side, you should be allowed to go to church and your community should function as you see moral and fit. And this other group, they live in a different society. If you guys want to have and live your own ways, I respect that. The problem, though, is one group is telling you what you can and can't do because they're trying to impose their will into your community.
But in their defense, I am trying to impose my will on theirs. And what I mean by that is this. Drag Queen Story Hour involves perverts twerking for toddlers, okay, to put it really bluntly.
Well, I to clarify, too, there's a specific instance in which somebody was...
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I'm not speaking loosely here. I'm saying a guy who actually committed these crimes, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because this is so much easier to get into it this way because it involves children. If a community, you know, look, they've got their own customs, and one of the customs is that they abuse children, and they twerk for children, and they indoctrinate children into this crazy, licentious ideology. But that's their custom, that's what they want to do. Do we not have any right to say, you shouldn't do that?
Depends on if you're coming from a... It's hard. It's moral frameworks. I certainly have my red lines, you know, so I look at what happens in some of these foreign countries, and they're shocking to me. And there is a point where I'm like questioning the line of warfare, for instance, what China does to the Uyghur Muslims and the women. And I had a very interesting conversation with Cassandra Fairbanks where she said, there's no war, no matter what. Like, every country does something wrong. Are we going to go to war with everybody?
Yeah.
It's a very interesting libertarian argument. And I think she's right about that. Why don't I care about, say, these other countries in Africa where they do atrocities, there are atrocities as well. And so it's a real challenge of where the lines are in terms of like the actual physical boundaries, where we're going to say we will enforce our morality.
Well, I'm sure a line for you would be like the kids stuff. I think this is true, a line for most people, because what do we say? Kids can't consent. You know, they don't really have mastery of their liberty. That's why we have age of consent laws, because we're not going to let kids do all these sorts of things. The left is trying to etch away at that right now.
And I'll clarify too, right? There's the mainstream media portrayal of Drag Queen Story Hour where it's just people in chairs with books.
Yeah.
And there's the actual videos you see on Twitter where they're twerking for children.
Yes.
And so there's the argument that I've seen is that twerking is just dancing from a different culture. So
it's just like a waltz, you know.
From a philosophical point of view and from a moral from a moral framework standpoint, my question is, are people who vote for certain things allowed to live certain ways if they choose? And at what point does someone's community get to impose their will on another community?
Well, it depends what they're voting for. You know, at one time, I got to meet Scalia a couple times when I was a student. It was amazing. I have no idea how I stumbled into this opportunity. And someone asked him, I think it was a question about the Second Amendment. They asked him, hold on, Mr. Justice, because you're saying that it's this individual right to these guns, but only these guns and not these other guns. How do you decide? And his answer, I thought, was deeply conservative and deeply wise. He said, you decide very, very carefully. And I think we need to decide these things very carefully, too. One stumbling block, I think, for a lot of people on this issue is the nature of liberty. What is liberty? You know, if right now they're saying that the kid should be able to be castrated if he wants to, because that's his right, that's his liberty if he wants to do it. But then we say, well, kids don't really have liberty because they're not educated, and the whole point of a liberal education is you master your liberty. I think the problem here is this conflation of liberty and licentiousness, meaning the current sort of modern lib view of liberty is that liberty means do whatever you want. Whatever your base desire is, just do whatever you want. And the conservative view of liberty, the view of the founders, the view of the Christian view, the pre-Christian view even, is that liberty is not the ability to do whatever you want. It's the right to do what you ought to do. And what I mean by that is this. I can bring it right down to earth. A heroin addict, actually this is a very popular debate on libertarian circles, right? Should you legalize all the drugs? Should the heroin addict be able to do whatever he wants? According to the modern liberal view of liberty, the heroin addict is the most free guy in the world, right? He can do, as long as he's got a buck in his pocket, he can shoot up. That's awesome. He's pursuing his will and his free choice. But we all know that that guy's not free. We all know he's a slave. He's a slave to his base passions. His higher will, I'm sure, is telling him, I wish I could stop doing this. I hate the heroin. Oh, addicts will tell you this all the time. But his lower appetites, because he hasn't cultivated his higher will, his lower appetites, his licentiousness, desiring all of that.
My view of the drug war stuff is, it should be legal insofar as you have to go to designated facilities that regulate and actually wean you off of it. So instead of having someone go in the gutter, they go in for a legal, you know, session or whatever, and they can regulate and limit so that they can actually
The purpose of getting them off the drug.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, that makes
you know, we have
methadone
clinics and things like that.
Yep.
So, but there are people who look at, say, Portugal, and they think we should just totally legalize everything.
Yeah.
I am of the legalize everything with regulation. So it's like, or I should say decriminalize with the goal of helping people instead of, you know, locking them up in prison or whatever.
But even in that view, that isn't exactly my view of it, but even in that view, you are acknowledging the goal should be people do less of this stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people now on the left, they say, it's kind of like the abortion thing, right? It's like, no, we got to celebrate it. We got to shout it. And that way lies madness.
You know, to me, that whole thing was crazy because, you know, growing up being liberal, what it meant to me and what my understanding of the things we argued for was respecting individual liberties and civil rights. Now the modern liberal, whatever that means, does not do that.
Yeah.
They can argue that they are, but it's moved well beyond any point of being responsible in your community to protect individuals. Now it's literally just no rules, no police.
But you know
do
why?
Whatever you want. You know, burn down the city in Minneapolis or whatever.
I've got to defend the left. I mean, your point is totally right. But their argument, which they really pushed in the 1970s, the radical feminists pushed this, is that the personal is the political. There's this great essay by that name, and this woman recounts how the New York radical women's groups, they would meet up, I refer to them as wine and cheese soirees, you know, these sort of housewives or unmarried women would meet up, but very often when the bourgeois housewife and the mother of two would show up, the woman would go there, and she was happy as a clam walking in. And then during the struggle session, they would raise awareness, and the woman would leave resentful and irritated, and because she's now aware of her own oppression. And this is called being liberated, and then the women would go out of there.
You know, I used to do nonprofit fundraising, and these offices, they hire large groups of people, send us out in the streets to wave at people with clipboards.
Yeah.
Hey, do you have a minute to talk about the environment? You've probably seen those people, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you come back from your day of hard fundraising on the street, some people aren't of strong mental fortitude. And they would do debriefs. They would always have a manager do a debrief with everyone one at a time, and then you'd stop it for your debrief, and then you'd leave. And what they were really doing was a morality check. If somebody in the office had a bad day, they would walk in, and they would have the squiggly line over their head, like the comics. And everyone else who maybe had a bad day but wasn't really thinking about it, maybe it was an okay day, maybe it was a good day.
Yeah.
They'd all be hanging out after work. The person who had the bad day would stand next to them as they say, like, how was your day? And they'd be like, it was okay for me. And they would go, this is the worst job ever. I hate this job. Dude, people are so awful. Dude, I had a guy and he did this to me. And then everyone starts sharing the negativity and it spreads like a virus.
Yeah.
So what would happen is they would do a debrief where they would ask people, how was your day? How do you feel? And if a tiny percentage of people were like, I'm just so tired. These people are so awful. They'd fire everyone in the office. Even there was like, there would be like five people who would remain. And those were like the tough willed. So I worked for these companies. I was a nation's best fundraiser for a variety of these nonprofits on the street, convincing people to donate to various charities.
I didn't think those guys ever got anybody to sign up at all.
Man,
that's very impressive.
I once got a lady to give me a check for $700 and then give me her bank account numbers to do it every single month. So, like, when you have the gift of gab, when you can talk, when you can...
I'm in the wrong line of work, man. That's great.
No, I think you're in the right line of work. Like, this stuff was dirty. It was, it's the opposite of what we're doing. You're speaking your truth. You're explaining how you feel and how you want to, you know, your goals towards improving things. This was the opposite. This was tricking people. And that's why I ended up leaving when I realized they were full of it.
Yeah.
To your point, though, about, you know, I guess we're talking about like negativity spreading and this mentality spreading.
Sort of, New York radical women, personal as the political.
Yeah, they'd come out feeling all angry.
Yeah.
You take a bunch of people who are happy and excited for their job, and you put them in a room, and you're good. But one person gets negative, and then within a week, everyone's performance dropped dramatically.
And do you see what that company understood?
Yep.
Is that the personal is the political. So if you have a company full of pissed off people, then you're gonna have a bad company. If you have a country, to get back to that earlier example, you have a country full of heroin addicts. It doesn't matter how wonderfully written your constitution is and how beautiful your Supreme Court building is. If your nation is full of individuals who are atrophied and sick and disordered, you're going to have a bad country.
And we have an opioid crisis. I mean, it's not.
And that's a literal. Yeah, right. That's a literal.
Yeah. So it's remarkable how easy it is to spread anger and negativity and how hard it is to stop it or spread the positivity.
It's what they call runaway breakdown in science, where one electron in a cloud of plasma will go and then all the other ones follow it rapidly and cause lightning, as we know it. That's the formation of light.
There you go.
And because like electrons are such lightweight, they move and they follow each other very quickly relative to the protons.
Let's do this. Let's segue. This is a hard segue, but I want to talk about one of the articles from the Daily Wire about wokeness in movies.
Okay.
And I do think it's relevant because I think what we're seeing in commercial industry and in movies and shows is this kind of, you're in a room with 30 other people and one person's pissed off.
Yeah.
It's happened to our country.
Sounds like Twitter.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It is.
And that the reason why I think we're seeing movies and commercials and marketing go this direction is, one, there has been a liberal bias in the establishment media for a long time, academia. And that meant, I think it's probably, you know, following civil rights, because I think everybody, for the most part, in today in America, objectively believes civil rights were a good thing.
Yeah.
There are obviously racists, but there's...
That's true. There's probably a handful of people.
There's few and far between, but no, on the left and the right.
Right,
you have left identitarians who, you know, when I was in, I think, Baltimore during the riots, they actually were circulating a discussion about why the... This is Black Lives Matter, saying ending segregation was bad. It was wrong. They genuinely thought so. So anyway, I digress. There's been, okay, we got disconnected, but it's fine. It'll kick back in. Since then, there's been a bias where it's like, okay, racism is bad, right?
Yeah.
And then because of that, everything sort of flowed in that direction. And if you're in the mainstream media, that's what's acceptable. That's what's socially just.
Yeah.
And so the only conversations that can happen are racism is bad or something in that context. So what happens then is when you create a Twitter or a Facebook, and it creates the massive room where everyone can share their rage and enrage other people, we end up with industry, commercials, movies, media,
government,
and every, so, you know, our culture has become built upon this low morale, demoralized, angry. Angry about what, you know?
You were saying earlier, like, what right do we have to say, like, I want you to change, like, to impose your will on some other person. I think that you twerking for kids is bad.
Yeah.
And I think we do have the right to say that. And
of course.
Now that's on social media. But sometimes you don't have the right to say, like, I think you should commit this crime because that's could be considered, I don't know, seditious or something like that. But this whole, like, I think you should fill in the blank has like taken on this runaway breakdown in social media, and now people are imposing, like, I think you should call me a man.
Yeah, right.
But let me to your point about runaway breakdown and the thing I was saying about the bias, Donald Trump can say, we're going to peacefully march to the Capitol to cheer on politicians. Insurrection.
Yeah.
Maxine Waters says, if we don't get what we want, we do more. We get more confrontational. And they're like, that's fine.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. What did the Republicans offer to do? Censure Maxine Waters?
Of course. It's pathetic.
We will wag our finger at her. Yeah. They impeached Trump over it, literally impeached him, and then tried to convict him for saying peacefully cheer on politicians.
Of course. It's absolutely pathetic. Because your observation here, and actually what we're seeing in Hollywood, is every culture, just by definition, is going to idolize some things and castigate some things. And we're going to think some things are good and some things are bad and some are right and some are wrong. And that's just the way it works. And if conservatives are unwilling to offer a substantive vision of that, then we're just going to get rolled over. You know, on this point here of this kind of nastiness in the movies, how, you know, it's Hollywood, the social media, it's all so nasty. I wonder if, too, beyond just the political vision of this, it has something to do with how exhausted and decadent we are as a society. What I mean by that is, I went to Cuba a few years ago. They had direct flights from LA for a little, very briefly. Thanks, Obama. And I go down to buy some cigars. I go to Cuba and I see a variety show. And this thing, man, I don't know. I felt bad for everybody in that slave island. It's a terrible place. At the time, it looked like they were going to open up. Who knows? Doesn't look like great reforms. I see a real Ricky Ricardo show. I mean, I'm talking Cuban Pete. He's the king of the right. It's all very big, very energetic, very enthusiastic. And I thought, oh my gosh, we haven't had that kind of entertainment in the United States for 50 years at least. Yeah. What is our entertainment now? It's apathetic. It's all ironic. It's all just sort of dressed down and like, I'm not even going to, you know, millennials and Zoomers too. They kind of like talking vocal fry, you know, they won't even put breath behind their voice because we're just so damn tuckered out. We're so exhausted.
I mean, there's very popular memes about harming yourself on Reddit. And there's the funny thing is it's created a derivative set of memes where these Gen Zers who make jokes about dying don't know that older generations don't know it's a joke and take it seriously.
Yeah.
But so I wanted to bring up this thing about Hollywood because I think this is from the Daily Wire. I think it shows whatever that is.
Yeah,
website or whatever.
Shout out.
Apparently there's a bunch of links on Facebook.
Daily Wire.
Daily Wire. Yeah, so no. But I think most people are not into this. The problem is social media has created it's the foreground and people don't realize that it looks really big. Because it's right in front of our faces, but it's actually really small. So let me pull some of this up. This is a Daily Wire poll. Most Americans oppose Oscars diversity requirements. They say the majority of Americans don't believe in diversity requirements. Don't believe diversity requirements should be a significant factor in whether or not a film is nominated for an Oscar at the Academy Awards, according to the findings of a new SurveyMonkey poll commissioned by the Daily Wire. They say 63% of respondents agreed that films should solely be judged on their artistic merits. While only 24% of respondents say diversity should be a significant factor in a film's nomination, the other respondents indicated they were unsure. Nearly half of non-white respondents, 48%, said artistic merit should be the sole consideration, while 38% said diversity should be factored in the nomination decision. To me, I am not surprised. The ratings are in the gutter.
Yeah.
It's not just the ratings for Hollywood. CNN news outlets, our ratings are in the gutter.
Mm-hmm.
Fox News, apparently the only outlet that's actually maintained their ratings post-Trump. Though they did take a big hit, you know, during Trump, like
they had,
at the end.
They had some pushback during the election.
Right. I look at these TV shows and you see the ratings are down. You look at the Grammys, you look at the Oscars. Nobody wants to watch this stuff. You look at some of these movies that have come out and wow, have they not made money?
Yeah.
Birds of Prey. Did you see that movie?
No.
You're lucky.
It's not for the flight back. I should not.
Do not want to watch that movie.
No.
It is, you know, the issue I take with it is that it's all based off of this, it's like indignation, like I'm, it's this anger.
Yeah.
It's not a positive question. So I think back to old content, old shows back in the day that I thought were progressive or in a sense, or talk to civil rights for things for kids that were done right. Yeah. I always reference Static Shock, the cartoon. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
No.
I mean, it was a kid's show and you have, this character, Virgil Hawkins. He's a young black teenager. He gains superpowers. The stories they go through are about, his best friend is gay. Should he join a gang? Yeah. And it was done in a very inquisitive way that explained a point.
Yeah.
Today's version of politics in shows like wokeness and diversity requirements are bashing you over the head with anger about how you're evil and wrong and we're mad at you.
Yeah.
It's very, very different from just telling someone what would be right. You know what I mean?
Well, I think part of it is because, getting back to your might makes right argument earlier, one would hope that in a civilized society, we can all just persuade one another through arguments that, hey, my view of this social question is right, and so here's my argument. But because the left has now basically abandoned that, and I don't just mean they don't make good arguments, and their arguments are no good. I mean, as a product of their radical ideologies over the years, they have come to deny the reality of objective, of the objective world, right? They'll actually say things like objective truth. That's actually a white supremacist dog whistle.
Yep.
Things like that. So that if they're going to deny that, then argument falls apart. And so it has to be angry or at least threatening in the sense that if they want to get you to go along with their program, they've just got to make you do it. They're not going to persuade you. It won't be gentle.
At what point do you legislate? I was thinking of this earlier. You were saying, do you have the right to tell someone, I think you should do this?
Yeah.
And yes, I believe you do if it's not a certain type of sedition or whatever. But at what point should you be able to legislate, I think you should do this? And that's basically kind of what our government does. And now it's what our social media is doing because it's one of the new forms of government.
Because it is the government.
And
how
are they legislating? By public opinion? By fear mongering? This juror was afraid that they were going to.
Well, so it's the anger, it's the negativity, it's the rage instead of the compassion. So a good example, I'm trying to think of what's a really good example of how they do wokeness wrong. And how about Ghostbusters 2016? Have you seen that one?
Nobody saw that one. Yeah, I don't think I'm alone here.
Awful. Why? Because they think that the idea of diversity in movies is being mean and nasty and insulting.
Yeah.
So they're mad that we do Captain America, we do Thor and Iron Man, and it's all white males.
Yeah.
I don't care that it's white males. I have no problem with, Shang-Chi, it's the new Marvel movie coming out. It's an Asian lead with Asian characters. I'm like, cool. When you do, when they see that those three movies where it's all white men, their reaction is to make a movie where they insult and berate and belittle white men.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not social justice. That's just the same thing, but just being mean to people.
You're right.
I think about a movie like Wonder Woman, the first one, or say Edge of Tomorrow, where they actually just have strong female characters to represent female characters, and they don't insult you and bash you over the head and tell you you're a moron or you're toxic or you're stupid. To me, that's the main issue here.
But it's a good rule of thumb I've found is that when you're trying to understand something the radical left is doing, just invert reality, invert the traditional order. So traditionally, humility is the beginning of wisdom, right? Very important virtue. What does the left celebrate? Pride. Not just gay pride. It's fat pride, skinny pride, slut pride, all these various marches to embrace pride, which a friend of mine once said it used to be.
Interesting.
I think it was Thomas Aquinas called it the queen of all vices. And now, my friend referred to it as the vice of all queens, which I think that's not nice. That's not a nice thing. It's very politically incorrect, but it's because it's way beyond the gay question. If you look at the essence of Christianity, what is it? That in this fallen world, you have the incarnation of perfect good. The actual God himself, the second person of the Trinity, incarnate into the world to redeem mankind. What do you have on the left? You have the exact inversion of that. You have no shot at redemption, no shot at the incarnation of the good, but you do have the incarnation of evil in the character of the straight white man who knows that he's a man, it keeps getting narrower and narrower.
We talked about this before the show a little bit, moral frameworks.
Yeah.
And something I've definitely mentioned on the show, that there are a lot of liberals in this country who are like, if you need religion to be moral, then I'm scared of, what you really think. And or what you would do without religion, you must be crazy.
Yeah.
And the example of Bill Maher, who would say something like, I don't need religion to have morals. And they don't realize that their morals are built upon the Judeo-Christian framework.
Right. Of course. Well, of course. I mean, it's always so sophomoric. When that fad happened in the mid-2000s, you know, the new atheists, I always felt the old atheists were a lot more impressive. I mean, I tried reading some of their books. They were sophomoric. I mean, they were so shallow that they weren't even making the arguments they thought that they were making. And someone like Bill Maher, yes, where does Bill Maher get his morality from? His civilization, which is built on Christianity. You can use the phrase Judeo-Christian, whatever you want. He was raised, I guess, in a Jewish household. Who knows?
Literally like Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson, you know, individuals who are fairly religious individuals, to say the least.
It's built on Judeo-Christianism and a little bit of moral, or I guess you call it authoritarian militantism. Like,
what do you mean?
Well, we just massacred the Native Americans to form our country in pride. Like, we're talking about humility and pride.
No, I don't think that's fair.
Think about American pride.
Wait. Hold on.
Okay.
We're talking about, there are certain things that in the Bible and the Torah.
Yeah, like humility.
But
America's not a humble place.
But what we
that's a good point. It's the place that makes Donald Trump.
They talk about pride and how
Trump. Trump represents like turning American culture up to 11. It's like the epitome of
pride. But he's prideful.
It comes from, I think, a decay of that moral framework.
Well, where does pride? What is the American thing with pride? Because humility is a virtue and pride is a sin.
You know, I think America's a humble country. And I actually think even Trump is politically one of the most humble politicians we've ever heard. Not because he doesn't have an ego. He slaps his name on every building he ever saw. But it's because he understands that there are limits to politics. And there's limits to what he can do. I mean, when he comes in, he says, look, you know, I'm a flawed guy, but I fix things. We're going to make it a little bit better. Conservatives traditionally have this idea, you can't remake the world into this utopia. To me, that's a very, very humble position.
I think we can rag on Trump for his character and persona as a representation of some of the worst things, like turning American culture up to the 11 and just really blasting the saturation he turns orange.
The casinos and the supermodels.
Right. Yeah. But politically, Trump wouldn't send the military or the feds into these riots.
Yeah.
He wouldn't. There were so many things Trump should have done. He wouldn't do. He wouldn't fire people.
Yeah.
He wouldn't force his way. And they kept screaming he was a fascist when he literally wouldn't do these things. In fact, Donald Trump shut down the child detention centers.
Yeah.
And Joe Biden reopened them.
Yeah.
So he built them too. Look, Trump, I would not say could be described as humble.
Not at all.
But
he strikes me as prideful as all get out. His name on buildings. He's all like, I'm the best. Like, that's pride.
When it comes to politics and the actions he took as a president, absolutely he was more humble than, say, Joe Biden was.
Well,
Joe Biden can rhetorically be humble. That's a fact. Donald Trump was the opposite of humble.
I don't think either of those guys. To be a cult
Donald
leader,
Trump
you've got to be.
Shuts down the facilities. You know why? Donald Trump shut down the child facilities because the left was yelling at him. Donald Trump banned bump stocks because the left was yelling at him.
Yeah.
Joe Biden tells the right to screw themselves.
Well, let me.
Yeah. Barack Obama, similarly.
Let me develop this a little, because I think pride is an American virtue in a lot of ways. It's a Catholic sin, but it's in the United States, it's like proud to be an American. And they teach you that as a kid. They taught me that as a kid, that, yes, you want to be prideful of your things, and it's good. And in a lot of ways, it does help you succeed in a capitalist society.
But do you think when I say – I mean, it just seems to me we're using this word pride in different ways. Like, when I say I'm proud to be an American, aren't we just talking about – love of country, patriotism, it's sort of an extension of filial piety. Like, I agree there's a degree of national pride that's a really bad thing when you say, like, every other country's awful and we're just gonna take them all over and everything. But in a way, America, I think, doesn't do that. We bomb the Middle East a lot, but I don't know that we do that. We kind of open our country up. We say, hey, man, come on in. We want all the best from everywhere.
We let in more immigrants than any other country, don't we?
I mean, the movement of immigrants into this country over the last 60 years is the largest movement of people ever on Earth in the history of the world. So,
people
love it. And we let a lot of people in. I mean, so much so that now it's become very difficult, if not impossible, to assimilate all. You're talking about millions of people every single year. And if you even raise the prospect of, hey, maybe we should, you know, like, cool it a little bit until we assimilate everybody, most people will look at you like you're crazy.
Do you think the Catholic Church just told people pride is bad because they wanted to keep control of people?
Pride made Satan fall like lightning from heaven. You know, I mean, pride is it's the sin of in the Garden of Eden. Actually, Whitaker Chambers, ex-communist, who wrote this great book, Witness, which actually helped bring Ronald Reagan from the left to the right, he said that communism is not a new ideology. Communism is the second oldest faith of mankind. It's the great alternative faith that began in the garden when the serpent told Adam and Eve, ye shall be as gods. And that presumption to be as a god is it, that is the Bible story. That is what causes the fall. So I think it's in the heart of man. I don't think it's uniquely American, but we've all got it. There's no doubt about that.
We've stumbled onto this talk about America, and we were talking about Hollywood. So I'm going to make this segment happen because I'm so excited for this. The first thing I want to say is this. If I could offer you up, all of you guys listening, a TV show where a guy takes an American flag and brutally beats Antifa, and, you know, he rejects a bunch of woke ideas. He's repeatedly told by, you know, people about how, you shouldn't wave that flag. It's the white man's flag, and that you got to understand. And so you have this black man who says, nah, I like the flag, and he picks it up. And then there are these people who are like, we should have open borders, and we're gonna smash the flag. And then he just beats them with it. Would that be a show conservatives would want to watch?
It sounds great. Where do I sign up? Where do I get it?
It's The Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Ooh.
So first, let me show this story from We Got This Covered that we talked about, I think, a couple weeks ago. New rumor says over 80% of Falcon and Winter Soldier viewers turned off episode 2 at the same point. Now, I'm talking about this. We're talking about Hollywood wokeness, the commercialization of this anger. And I got to talk about this show. And I think pride fits in because I'm wondering why it is. I see a lot of people saying this show is woke. Don't watch it. It's awful. It's racist. People don't want to watch it. And I wonder if there's an element of pride in assuming Hollywood does this, so maybe not giving it a chance, and maybe being a little more open-minded. So we have this segment from Marvel.com, or this article. Cast and creatives behind The Falcon and Winter Soldier discuss patriotism, supremacy, Captain America's mantle. And you have this quote from Anthony Mackie, who plays, he plays The Falcon. He says, for Sam, it's a constant battle of how do you fight for a country that's never fought for you, remarks Anthony Mackie, explaining in many ways the one thing that held up the moniker of that shield was the idea of who Steve Rogers was, which is Captain America. That comment to me was really interesting because it does, I think, in many ways show that Marvel, they're woke and they don't get it. For Anthony Mackie to say that, a country never fought for you, I mean, I think one of the bloodiest battles in the history of the world was the Civil War.
Right.
Quite literally to end slavery, among other, you know, peripheral factors, but that was a key component. But here's what I got to say about this show and what Hollywood is doing and what we need to be careful of. I'm seeing a lot of people tell me I'm wrong because I said the show's not woke. I'm like, it's not woke. Give it a chance. It's actually it's fairly centrist. It addresses issues of race. But quite literally, I'm going to spoil the show for those who haven't seen the finale because the finale came out and I was so excited watching a dude reject wokeness, pick up the American flag and beat Antifa with it. I mean that, like, I don't literally like Antifa getting beaten, but the bad guys are called flag smashers.
Yeah.
They want open borders. they're terrorists who kill people.
Amazing. Yeah.
They think might makes right, and because they have super strength, they're allowed to kill whoever they want. She literally says to there's a soldier with PTSD. He watched his best friend, who's a black man, get killed, and she says his life doesn't matter. And I was like, that's an amazing indictment of these fake woke Antifa who would use someone for political points if they could get ahead and then literally tell you to your face they don't matter. Anthony Mackie plays a black man who questions whether or not he should wear the American flag, ultimately decides to do it, and they even show a scene where there's another black man who says no self-respecting black man would wear that shield, and Anthony Mackie says, I know there's people who'll be mad at me for wearing this, but, you know, he wants to fight for this country, and he'll be damned if someone tells him he can't do it. And then he's literally wearing the American flag, chasing down open borders extremists. I'm like, I'm sorry. I mean, there's definitely a message about racism being bad. But it sounds like a more classically liberal or even a conservative statement about why racism is bad.
Well, it's obviously conservative in the sense that America is good and the flag smashers are bad. I mean, just in the most basic sense, that is a conservative message.
Right.
You're going to make me – I was at 1.5 Marvel products is what I had. You're going to make me go to 2.5 now.
I certainly think there's elements that people could call woke, but I wonder if what a lot of people – because I tweeted it was getting too woke. And it was after this point where a car pulls up, a squad car pulls up, and you got, you know, Anthony Mackie and you got Falcon and Bucky Barnes, a white guy and a black guy, and it was this very stereotypically, like, racist moment where the cops were like, sir, are you all right, to the white dude? A lot of people got mad about that.
Yeah.
But I'm like, no, I'm going to watch it because I don't want to fall into this trap where I'm like, ah, it's what I woke, I won't watch it.
Yeah.
And then I was amazingly surprised. There was a point where apparently, you know, Sam Wilson, the Falcon, black man, is you know, Bucky Barnes apologizes, saying, I didn't realize what it meant for a black man to wear, you know, that shield and be Captain America. But he's like, he doesn't want to do that. He has a little kid tell him, he's walking on the street, little kid goes, it's Black Falcon. And he goes, nah, I'm just Falcon. And the kid goes, no, my dad says you're Black Falcon. He goes, I'm just the Falcon. And I'm like, you are just the Falcon.
Yeah.
Like, your race is not relevant to you being a superhero who's awesome.
Yeah.
And when he decided to defy people in this black community who said, you think you can come in here because you have that white man's shield. And he's like, but I like that guy. He was cool. He's my friend. He's like, Steve Rogers didn't do this to you. And then he decides to wear the American flag representing the country. Even for every reason he felt like he was wronged by this country or didn't fight for him. For every, you know, for everyone telling him that America was bad and doesn't represent him and hates him, he still believed in this country. And I'm like, it's like hardcore nationalist.
Yeah.
It's like almost Trumpian in a way.
I'm wondering if it's Chinese propaganda in that they have now incited Antifa to go riot and burn things down for a couple of years. Now they're going to start making art about why we should fight them.
Yeah. It's the 4D chess of the Chinese communists. Yeah.
I did think about this and I wonder to what extent there's a conspiracy in media now that the election's over. They need to stop Antifa and start putting out messages about loving the country and getting things back on track, because, you know, we were promised the riots would stop once Joe Biden came in, and they ain't stopping. They're getting worse.
Yeah. Well, that is the problem. When you unleash violence, you don't get to control it. You know, actually, when you begin a war, you know, things quickly spiral out of control. And that's clearly what's going on here. But I'm actually glad you told me this about Marvel, because conservatives do this a lot where they'll see a little, because we're so abused, because this whole culture abuses and abuses, just smacks us all the time. We just, the minute we see something, we say, okay, that's all. I'm done. I can't take it anymore. And there was that movie that came out. I don't even remember the name of it. It was supposed to come out a few years ago. And it was about how these white, rich liberals, you know, I don't even know if it was all white people. It was The Hunt, right?
It was really good.
It seemed great. I mean, the whole thing was these rich coastal libs were hunting down good, regular Americans. And, you know, I thought this is the most conservative movie ever made. I only saw the trailer. And then there was a backlash from, not from libs, it was from conservatives who said, how dare you hunt me down? You think, like, do you get the point of the movie?
Yeah. Well, even Trump came out.
And Trump, that's right. Trump came against it.
Even I came out. And my point was, I think we're in too divisive of a time to be making a video where liberals are kidnapping and hunting down conservatives.
Yeah. They might think it's like a nice movie. Yeah. But, it's a plan. Yeah, right.
So I was like, I don't want to see that thing. And then I did. And it was, as I would say, it's actually not partisan.
It's good.
There was like, it made fun of everybody.
Yeah.
And I'll say this about Falcon and Winter Soldier. Maybe it's conservative, like you should watch it and tell me what you think.
Yeah.
You know, but I think it's actually fairly centrist. I think it's fairly, it's not trying to, in many ways it opposes wokeness, but it does address the animosity and the feelings of racism in an interesting way. So I think there's a lot of people who, I'll put it this way. To me, wokeness represents insulting, denigrating, beating someone over the head, telling them they're stupid or evil or wrong or privileged, whereas actual social justice, as I understood it, would be like someone calmly and explaining to you with respect how they feel when it comes to racism.
Wow. So when you go woke, it's really you're getting angry.
Well, but you're it's almost like if I was going to insult you and say you're stupid, this person, that person, your identity, that to me is like what we see with wokeness. It's this idea that white people have some kind of inherent badness to them or something, that whiteness represents more, like, it's the most insane thing.
I mean, so you could take on social justice and be like, I think you shouldn't be twerking for kids. But if you start going, you're an idiot for twerking for kids, then you're becoming woke.
There's a couple things. One, I think a lot of wokeness is a quest for power, not a quest for compassion.
Certainly, yeah.
So, you're wrong. Bend your knee or else I'll take your job away.
Yeah.
Whereas what I see in The Falcon and Winter Soldier is, you know, there's one guy who, one of the characters, seems to me to represent wokeness. Animosity towards white people and the American flag. And the main character rejects that and says, no, I like this flag. I'm going to fight for this country.
Well, you know, it's all negative. Everything you've just described is purely negative, right? Wokeness is this purely negative campaign. And that's just the new term for political correctness. There's all sorts of terms. Part of what the left does is just change the terms all the time. So that's the new one. But it gets back to something that Karl Marx said, which is, getting back to quoting Karl Marx every so often. Karl Marx, in a letter, I forget the year, he called for the ruthless criticism of all that exists. And this was taken up later by radical Marxist theorists and a practical politician, Antonio Gramsci, in his construction of what you'd call cultural hegemony, Western Marxism. This is taken up in the Frankfurt School and critical theory, which is, now we see the derivation of critical race theory. It's dominated the universities. That is the woke indoctrination, comes from critical theory. And once you get past all the pretentious jargon in these crazy theories, what is the theory? It's very simple. The theory is to criticize. It's the same thing Marx called for. It's just, because guess what? I've noticed this about bigots, you know? My friend Andrew Klavan points this out a lot. Bigots are not always wrong about the other guy. They're just wrong about themselves. You know, they're really good at criticizing everybody else, yeah, but they don't see their own flaws. Everything is susceptible to criticism. So it's a very, very easy sort of new pseudo-academic discipline. And there's no end to it. It's just rubble is going to be the end of it.
I think, you know, one of the ways to look at it is I had a conversation with a bunch of Trump supporters over dinner when I was in, I think it was in California. Yeah. This was during like the Trump campaign era. I think it was maybe just after he got elected. And I was talking about historical racism, and immediately the reaction was like laughter and like, you know, oh yeah, yeah. And I was like, legit. No, like, I mean it sincerely. I mean it seriously. And they're like, oh, you're not joking. And then I explained to them like redlining and blockbusting,
where
we actually have legit racist policies in this country that have a negative impact on communities, you know, of color into the modern era. But institutionally, we've actually made that all illegal.
Yeah.
However, the remnants still exist. And so the way I see it is, when I treat people with respect and say, just hear me out on this because I want to understand you, you get respect back. That I think is totally fine. I actually have no problem with seeing that in a TV show. The issue is when instead of saying like, Michael, let me explain to you something about my experience, they say, you're a stupid white man,
Nazi,
you fascist. Yeah. And like when movies are predicated upon berating and insulting you.
Yeah.
That's get woke, go broke.
Well, you know, the late philosopher Roger Scruton pointed this out. He said, civilization thrives on forgiveness, on confession first, and then forgiveness. And when I confess that I've done something wrong, even if it's confessing historical wrongs at the national level, whatever, I sacrifice my pride. And when you forgive me, you sacrifice your resentment. And we have both sacrificed something that we cherish that really means a lot to us. And that's the only way you can move forward. But if you're not going to get that, if you're going to have a whole culture permeated by resentment where you get it you get it in school, you get it in sometimes as a matter of law, and you get it even when you want to relax and go to the movies and that's all you get.
It's pride.
Right, right.
It's really interesting because I've had so many experiences where I've always been very confident in myself. I don't need to justify or validate myself to others. And so I just, you know, I don't, but there's a lot of people who are proud.
Yeah.
They need others to know how good they are, how big they are, and it gets them in trouble.
Well, you know, true humility does away with false modesty. There's some people who can't take a compliment. That's just another form of pride, right? That's just the flip side of it. But true humility, you can say, yeah, okay, I did this right. This was all right. You know, hey, thanks, man. It's cool. Moving on, focusing on other things. Trying to move forward.
In 2006, I decided to use YouTube videos as a form of confession, and I started making videos about my past and my history and the mistakes and the lies I've told.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it allowed me to clear my mind. I was able to start thinking full, complete sentences, and I can have a silent mind now.
You're a braver man than I am. When I want to confess, I go into a little black box with a scrim where I change my voice and stuff. That's very brave.
I got ridiculed so hard for so many years. To this day, I still get comments on those videos. They're all up online, and I would intrigue anyone.
Why'd you do it, if you don't mind my
asking?
Social
experiment. I thought someone could. What would Jesus do with this technology?
Yeah.
He'd prostrate himself to the humanity and beg them to come together. So I tried that.
Pride, wow. Pride goeth before the fall.
Yes.
I was like, I remember that. I got to look that up. I think about that, especially in the context of news. All of these journalists are so desperate for validation.
Yeah.
Their pride consumes them. They won't admit that when they're wrong. They refuse to be wrong, and they'd rather win above all else. We need humility desperately.
Yeah, but the problem is, because I agree, oh, if only we could do that and everyone would just confess and it'd be cool, right? But the problem is right now with cancel culture, which is a real phenomenon. It's a very specific phenomenon. It's a leftist phenomenon. When the left says, well, you know, in the 50s, conservatives canceled communists. Yep, we did. That was awesome. That's great. Every society has boundaries. But what's going on right now is that if you go wave the flag, the American flag, or you don't go along with some woke fashion to castrate kids or something, then you lose your job. That is cancel culture. And if you in any way admit that you're wrong, let's say you actually legitimately do something wrong. I, on occasion, have done that. And I wish that I could apologize for that. You can't, because the minute that you apologize, you're dead. They will never forgive you. You saw it with the guy who hosted The Bachelor. You saw it with all the, a number of other journalists sometimes. You're dead. So what do you have to do? You simply cannot enact that humility.
Yep, it's an admission of guilt.
It's an admission of guilt, and you won't. There's no redemption.
So you got it. Yeah, I lost. I was in Hollywood as an actor, and after I started doing that, no one would cast me. They thought I was like dangerous. Which I was, because I would have called them out and destroyed that.
You got to keep the secrets, man.
Disgusting, secretive community. I would have, and they knew that.
Look at you know, Harvey.
People do they do secrets. Forgive, but. If you have a job that you can lose, you'll probably lose it if you go that route and you try to be humble. If you work for yourself, you're in a much better position. And YouTube ads, you know, you can kind of work for yourself there. I don't know. I'm getting off on a tangent.
Well, you can build a business, but I find it fascinating that the left, I think, is consumed by pride.
Yes.
I think that's a big factor. And I think when you are, you can't admit when you're wrong.
Yeah.
And if you can't admit when you're wrong, you can't improve yourself.
Well, you ever notice this about stupid people? Is stupid people think that they're really, really smart. And then smart people, the first thing you notice about smart people is that they're very aware of how stupid they are. And it's not false modesty. They're actually aware of it. Because maybe, I don't know, maybe the smart person met a smarter person one time and just kind of put it all into perspective. It is a fail-proof rule of thumb. The loudest voices in the room who are
they
never admit that they're wrong.
You really gotta listen to people to discern that for yourself, because if a smart person says something that a stupid person doesn't understand, the stupid person will tell the smart person they're not making any sense and that they're the stupid.
So this is Bukowski. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
The problem with the world is that the intelligent people are full of doubts while the stupid ones are full of confidence.
See, I didn't even know that. Yeah. I didn't even know that book, The Big Bukowski. It's a great movie.
The Big Bukowski.
Getting back to movies. Yeah, it's a great one.
So what do? Should we just humiliate ourselves?
No. No, well, you don't want to humiliate yourself. You just...
Well,
you
for
just,
humility, I mean.
There's a difference. There's a... You know, when you humiliate yourself, you no longer have any dignity. You're sort of offending your own dignity. When Christ says, for instance, love your neighbor as you love yourself, well, if you truly hate yourself... then, you know, it's not going to be great for your neighbor. So there is a recognition of human dignity here.
I mean, that kind of explains a lot of leftism as well. A lack of self-confidence, a lack of understanding who you are. And that same level is translated to other people they also have no empathy or sympathy for.
There's also virtue and vice are real things. It's not just your opinion, man. They really are real things. And I do think there's a lot of shame. I mean, you know, all this shout your abortion nonsense or the slut walks or whatever is the lady doth protest too much, methinks. A little bit right. I mean, clearly something is gnawing at them. And I say this as at various times in my life, you know, I was an atheist for 10 years and I acted like it. You know, you can really give yourself over more to just kind of doing whatever you want, vices and all this. There are other times when you try to avoid that and you try to tame your will down. And I will just tell you, it's better. There is a reason that people have long sought the virtuous life. And if you have a country that is just racked by this shame and this guilt and this resentment, this anger and this self-hatred, and they don't know what to do with that, it's like a powder keg. It's gonna pop.
Maybe we need, what was it called? Bushido? Was that the
Bukowski. Lebowski.
Lebowski.
No, yes. Wait, what was that? Hold on.
The ancient Japanese honor code?
Yeah, Bushido.
Oh, yeah,
seppuku is seppuku. Yeah.
No, I'm talking about, like, honor.
Yeah.
You know, let me throw in a Star Trek reference while I get the chance.
Oh, excellent. Boy.
I absolutely, I'm a huge fan of Star Trek. You a fan of Star Trek?
I've never seen. A single property.
In the original Star Trek, there were, you've heard of Klingons, I'd imagine.
Yes, I have.
So the Federation is a United Federation of Planets. It's very much reminiscent of the idea of America with classically liberal values.
Yeah.
And there are Klingons and, oh, they're enemies. When The Next Generation was made, which was, you know, I think 1989 or 88, 89 maybe, they, all the Trekkies are going to be mad at me for not knowing the exact year. The show starts with a Klingon serving on board a Federation ship. to show that in the time span from the first series to the second, peace has been achieved. In the story, what happened was a distress signal was sent out by a Klingon colony that was being attacked by Romulans.
Yeah.
Aliens started attacking, killing women and children. The Federation Enterprise of its era went in without help, and they all died trying to save their enemies. And the Klingons saw that as a great act of honor because they're a culture of honor and warriors. And so that's what ignited a peace agreement. I just bring that up because I'm really, that story is so awesome. This is amazing writing about how honor actually, like what it really meant. And that you had this warlike warrior race that watched these, you know, classically liberal Federation types say, like, we're probably going to die, but we want to save our own enemies. I think back to these stories about Batman and Superman refusing to kill at all costs because it was about what was true to them, what was right, and what was honorable. And now we have a moral framework in wokeness that's built upon just having power, which means they will sacrifice you. They will figuratively burn you at the stake because they want power. And there's no honor.
But honor doesn't, it couldn't possibly exist because we're actually told these two contradictory frameworks, right? These two contradictory anthropologies, one of which is we're meat puppets, and all of these metaphysical things like honor, love, joy, dreams, it's all just delusions. It's just synapses firing in our brain. It's just a joke, right? So that's one story we're told. Then we're told the total opposite story, which is that Gnostic story, that actually the ultimate reality is just my innermost self. That is whatever I want, whatever I perceive is reality. But there, too, there's no such thing as honor. It's just my willfulness, as you say. And I think part of the reason they tell us to believe in both of these contradictory ideas at the same time is what Orwell described as doublethink. He says doublethink. The thing about doublethink is it makes you unwilling and unable to reason because you got to hold the two contradictory ideas at the same time. But both of them exclude the real world that you're describing, which is, oh, there's something beyond my will. There is such a thing, and we can deny it all we want, but, you know, I recognize it when I see it. There's such a thing as honor.
Now let's break down, you know, the connection. Batman won't kill. Superman won't kill. They've had their stories where they have, for sure, but the general idea.
Yeah.
And why the story was written. I'm not saying that Klingons are real. It was written by people in the United States who believed in the value of it. Imagine you have a moral framework that understands honor. In this, the Batman won't kill the Joker.
Yeah.
Excellent writers have explored what happens when you have people with no honor meeting people with honor. And in one of the storylines in the DC universe is that the Joker poisons Superman and then detonates a nuclear device, killing millions. And Superman has a psychotic break where he says, if you just killed him, this would have never happened. If you choose to sacrifice yourself to save your own enemy and they don't share your morals, they'll laugh as you do it and then slit your throat once you've saved them. You will pull them up from the cliff. Because you're the good guy with honor who says, I must save even the bad guy. And then as soon as you do, they'll try and push you off the edge. So you have people in the United States right now, I being a fan of Star Trek and these stories of Batman and these you know, there's just stories for kids. But it inspired me and it made me understand what was honorable and moral. That means I'm not willing to lie, cheat, or steal.
Yeah.
But it means the other moral framework of might makes right from the woke, they absolutely will.
Especially during times of war. If you look at the British in the Revolutionary War, for instance, the British were fighting in lines, standing up out in the open honorably, and the Americans were hiding in the woods, stealing, lying, sending false orders.
That is mostly a myth. It really was a lot of the same thing. Meeting on battlefields.
I guess,
but we did adopt some guerrilla tactics.
Yeah, to enhance your point, lying, cheating, and stealing was George Washington's forte. Like, he was
that
a master
is
of deception.
An outrageous calumny. No, I disagree with that. I'm sorry.
He was a spy. He would send false orders and lie and confuse the enemy.
Well,
the
armies used spies, as all armies do.
He was a master spy.
George Washington is one of the most virtuous men who has ever walked
the
earth.
Definitely, but he was a killer.
He was a killer, but he was a justified killer. And I think this is what we're getting at here, which is the honor of it all means, well, you say, okay, I want to be honorable, and but then if my enemy doesn't recognize that honor, he's going to slit my throat, and what a fool I am, he's going to laugh at me.
Yeah.
But it's
we still do it.
And you have to recognize, you can't fake it, I guess is what I'm saying. It's very popular right now, I've noticed, in the kind of center and some disaffected liberals and on the right to say, man, all those old things we used to have, like dignity and honor and religion and all, you know, that I know that that's good, but I can't bring myself to believe in it. Douglas Murray says this a lot, the British writer. He'll say, look, I'm a Christian atheist. You know, basically, I think it's good, but I can't bring myself to believe in it. And the thing is, I sympathize with these people who know that it's a good thing, but they can't bring themselves to actually believe in it. You can't fake it. You actually have to believe that there is an objective moral order, that the Joker, he's gonna get his just desserts. He's gonna get his comeuppance. Maybe not in this life, but in the life to come. That there actually is an objective good. It's not just a sort of nice social thing that we all agree on to have a good society. Because if you just pretend, then I think when it comes down to it, the real rubber meets the road, it's going
to
fall
apart. We're about to jump to Super Chats, but I want to tell you my my kind of, I don't know what you'd call it, religious view or so. So first, I absolutely believe in God, and I think one of the challenges a lot of people have when it comes to the idea of God is that they have, I guess, I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but a child's view of what God would be.
Yeah, big man in the sky.
Exactly, yeah. As opposed to a force beyond human imagination, like you can't even conceive of what...
Outside of time and space. Which, by the way, not to interrupt, but if God is to exist at all, he must, in his fullness, be incomprehensible. Because if you could cram him into your little head, he just, by definition, wouldn't be God.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, so I think that's the first mistake people make, in that they assume when people talk about God, it's a guy with a beard sitting on a cloud. Yeah. And I'm like, you know, like a child would imagine it, or a comedian would depict it. Yeah. So I definitely believe in God. But I think this, you mentioned we have to believe that Joker will get his comeuppance.
Yeah.
There's something else that drives me in all this. And I started thinking about this a while ago about what's the point of life? Why is life? I can't tell you, because it's a great philosophical question that I don't think, you know, we are but small little meat.
I could give you an answer.
Yeah.
To know God and enjoy him forever. From the catechism.
So from my understanding of philosophy, the things I have read, the things I think, I understand that view, especially having grown up Catholic. But I started to think about, I need a function, right? Like, let me try and look at the universe to what we claim to know about it. And we certainly don't know much. And a lot of these ideas are probably wrong. That's what science does. It gets things wrong, then improves upon them later. And I started thinking about entropy and negative entropy. And I started thinking about what life does, organizing free energy into complex systems, from the most rudimentary of self-replicating proteins to single-celled organisms to multi-celled organisms to beyond that with ecosystems, where at first, you have a multicellular organism consuming free energy and literally converting it into a replica of itself and expanding and having more and more kids. And then eventually, you know, 10 fish becomes 100 fish. They're converting those particles into fish. They're organizing things. They're creating. Eventually, you get abstract creations like an ecosystem where beavers start manipulating their environment. And then, an acorn falls and a squirrel plants it for the winter, but forgets where it is. And then a tree grows. Then you get humans who start creating complex systems in the abstract, languages, ideas. They start mapping the universe. I thought to myself, creation, but not in the sense that we can create, because we can't. We can only change things.
We're procreators, yeah. We're not, right. We're not actual creators.
So
yeah.
I think, to me, what I find to be the simple driving factor in all of this is that we are a force for good. And what is that good? It is to fix things, to protect things, to organize things, to grow things, to learn things. And that's the most simple way I could ever see it, that we organize. It's the most rudimentary way to look at it. However, think about what's good and what's bad. Killing is wrong. It horrifies people. It's the most, one of the most evil things a person can do. Having children is one of the greatest things a person could do. And so I think about why I would oppose the Joker is because he destroys.
Yeah.
He hurts and he causes detriment. The one thing I see life doing is creating, procreating, developing, and that's what we should strive to do.
Well, that's what you've just given is not a simplistic answer. Yeah. I mean, it's a simple answer, but it's not a simplistic one. You're saying that you think that the purpose in life is to pursue the good. That is just obviously true. I mean, when I give the answer that it's to know God and enjoy him forever, that's just a more elaborate version of that answer, right? Which is that the good, the true, and the beautiful as the transcendentals of being or have some sort of relation to one another, and the ultimate expression of that is in God. And but your answer is totally right.
I think I have to complicate it, though, because in order to grow children, you have to kill and consume. So destruction is a part of this organization.
Yes. In order to have negative entropy, you must create more entropy. But we are, I think I agree with you in that what we are doing as a species is we are getting to the best of our ability to try and know God.
Yeah.
I think, in my opinion, we are here because God wants us to protect and create and grow. And through our expansion of knowledge and philosophy and understanding, we are coming to know God better and better.
Have you guys seen chymatics in action? Have you ever seen chymatics?
No.
It's when sound vibrates a membrane with like rice on it, and the membrane,
yeah.
the rice
oh,
will
yeah,
vibrate.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's, I think, what God, this universal vibration is like making our bodies behave a certain way. I don't know if fate is real. I don't know how you feel about fate and free will, and if we're just
well,
destined.
I think providence is real, and free will is also real, and that's a complicated situation. But yeah, surely there is an order to things, and there is a providence and an unfolding of reality.
Let's put a tack in this, and we'll do the bonus segment, because we can go a lot longer, because we do have to do super chats.
Yeah.
A lot of people have questions for you, Michael. But
right.
Then we can do a – this is going to be a fun conversation.
I'm going to take all of Michael Malice's questions on that super chat. I don't care how many come in. I want them all.
Michael Malice's?
Yeah.
All right. We got Jordan Jones. He said – if you haven't already – get your super chats in. We'll read as many as we can. Smash the like button. Become a member at timcast.com. We will have a bonus segment coming up. We're going to talk about philosophy, God, probably DMT.
A lot of DMT. Am I on the Joe Rogan show? Hold on. Is that? Yeah. Did we? Hold
but,
on.
But it's only. Yes. But it's Ian's influence.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it.
All right. We'll do that. So go to timcast.com, sign up, and let's read some super chats. We got Jordan Jones. He says, Michael Knowles, I'm still subscribed over to the Daily Wire almost entirely because I enjoy your content.
All right. Keep
triggering libs and doing what you do.
Be dapper.
Thanks, man. You hear that, Ben, by the way? That was a subscriber only there for me. Don't you tow my car in the parking lot.
You know, I enjoy the triggering of libs and cons.
They're great.
I think people who get triggered, Ben is really good at not being triggered.
Yeah.
And that's enjoyable when Ben rolls with the punches. And you got to do it. So trigger away.
Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Threadian says, Michael, I bought your first book for our White Elephant Exchange a few years ago, and it was a monstrous hit.
Thank you. You know, it is funny with that, the blank book. It's called Reasons to Vote for Democrats, a Comprehensive Guide. It's totally blank. And I just did it to irritate my Democrat friends and relatives. I thought I'd sell like 20 copies or something. But the fact is, much like Thucydides, it is not for the applause of the moment. It is an eternal contribution for all time. It remains true every single year,
right.
Truer and truer by the year. So ageless. Thank you. I'm glad it was a hit.
I know you just bragged to Ben, so I'll read you this one. Rampton says, can y'all have Andrew Klavan next time instead?
Real nice. Cool. Good night, everybody.
Yeah. Hey, you chased my guest away. Yeah.
All right, here we go. 3D Pyromaniac says, let's see how long until Knowles plugs his newest book, Speechless, Controlling Words, Controlling Minds, available now for pre-order on Amazon, at least until they find out what it says.
Wow. That sounds like a very – could you repeat the name of that book? That's so interesting. I don't even need to plug it. Yeah. I've got all these wonderful
people.
What's it called? It's called Speechless.
Speechless.
Controlling Words, Controlling Minds. It's available now for pre-order.
Oh, very cool.
I heard on Amazon, right?
Until they ban it, yeah.
Speechless.
Because we have the best audience of any podcast.
Yeah.
Yes, of course.
Andrew Yu says, Star Trek Next Generation, Season 4, Episode 21, Drumhead. Picard has to stop a witch hunt on the Enterprise. Fits so close to what the left does based on politics. For real, man. And what you need to understand about The Next Generation is that it was just written by a bunch of dudes in the late 80s and early 90s in America who held these values and were explaining to them to people. It's amazing. Man, what a great show. Basically, the show is someone's accused. I think this is what he's accused of. Is this the one where they accuse the guy of being a spy? Then they go around, they want to prosecute everybody, and it's just lock them all up because they're spies. Ah. Papa Bear says, Tim, big fan. I'm a veteran, libertarian, and West Virginia native. Wokeism is in our universities, although there are still some intelligent professors. That's true, man.
That's true. It's only getting worse.
What is going on with this? Eli Wood, are you guys having the Daily Wire people send super chats or something?
Are they? What are they doing? What's he saying?
I can't wait to see how many times Michael will plug his new book, Speechless. Controlling Words, Controlling Minds, available now for pre-order during tonight's show.
So I will say, so my book.
Your audience.
So
man.
So I've really conditioned them like Pavlov's dog.
I love it.
I have because my book doesn't come out for 2 months. They're actually one of the big tech companies. But they're already kind of messing with the publisher's advertising campaign. So I knew this might happen. So I started plugging it. Seriously, I started plugging it like 3 months out. But it's not just, I'm not smooth about it. We're talking like frying pan over the head. So the producers on my show created a little bell every time I do it. And, if I do it like 4 times, like the screen starts to shake, the universe starts to fall apart. So it's a Pavlovian reaction.
I see that. It's working great.
So everyone's now super chatting so that I read and plug your book for you.
Beautiful.
Man, that's great.
All right. I'll Fight You Naked says, I wrote a piece on Medium called Letter to a Wokeheart. You can cite all the facts and statistics, but that rarely makes a difference. However, if you can tell a story that shows the end of the road they are going down, you have a chance.
Interesting.
Yeah.
The issue is, I worked for these nonprofits. Not only did they train me how to convince someone of your political ideology very quickly and very easily in a matter of minutes on the street with someone you've never met before.
Yeah.
I was also particularly good at it just on my own. But the problem I had was one day it was when Deepwater Horizon happened. Mm. They gave us our talking points and I was reading about this and I was like, man, this is bad. And I was standing on the street and I was talking to a guy. And I cited a number, and he goes, that's not true. And I was like, no, yeah, it's this many gallons are spilling. It's not. And then he pulled up his phone, and he's like, it's this many number. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry, I must have had the wrong facts. He's like, you're coming out here trying to lie to me to make me give you money? And I was like, I'm sorry, dude, I had no idea. Someone must have given something wrong. My apologies. And he's like, yeah, whatever. And he walks away. Call the office, and they're like, don't worry, just keep saying it.
Oh,
and
no.
I was like, nah, you mean to tell me you had me lying out here?
Wow. Yeah.
And so I got really mad. I thought I was doing something good. I thought I found a job where I was like, I was going to help. And then it turns out I was helping their bottom line instead.
Yeah, well, because if the number that they gave you is a more persuasive story, well, that's all they care, right?
CNN.
Yeah, that's right. Were you working for CNN at the time?
All right.
No, but we did fundraise like basically a block away from them.
Did you really?
Yeah, this was when I was out in LA. Yeah. And then I was just like, yeah, man, this is not legit. And I'll tell you this. If I wanted to, if I felt the ends justified the means.
Yeah.
Oh, man, there'd be no question. I'd do whatever I wanted. But the problem is there are no ends.
Yeah.
It's the question of, once you stage your glorious revolution, how will you protect from the next glorious revolution?
Yeah.
You think you're justified in using violence, deception, and manipulation today, then why would you stop doing it tomorrow?
Well, it's perpetual. Fidel Castro, when he's 92 years old, he's still wearing the military fatigues. Yeah. Like, it's still the Cuban Revolution 50 years later.
Do you think that, along the lines with that last guy super chatting, that you, in order to help people, you're trying to explain a potential end to the road that is disastrous to warn them?
I don't know. I don't know if that's enough. Maybe this, like, Falcon and Winter Soldier thing will move people away from Antifa.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I mean it because maybe what people need to realize when they're like, it's woke, it's really bad. Maybe from a conservative perspective, it's got too much social justice, like, racism and whatever. But maybe to somebody who's been beaten over the head by the wokeness, you open the door by showing them something they can relate to. Hey, racism is bad. Look, the cops are bad. And then you have the villains literally be Antifa.
Yeah.
And then they're going to be like, Captain America can stop you. I believe in America and the American flag.
Mm. It's also, don't forget, the left, it's not that the left loves Antifa. They recognize Antifa is a very dangerous thing that wants to burn it all down. So they just use them. They're the sort of tactical military wing. I think I heard you describe it this way. Or I heard someone describe it this way. That Antifa is effectively the militant wing of the establishment. But you gotta rein it in sometimes. when they're causing more harm than good, you gotta rein them in.
And maybe now they're kinda like, okay, we had Antifa for a few years. It helped us with Trump. And now we're gonna, maybe tone it down a little bit and cut them off and kick them out.
Yeah.
We'll see how that plays out. All right. Chris Pivoto says, as you often say, FB knows when we use the bathroom or other tracking ideas. Would the government seriously touch Section 230 if shared our info? In the wild, it's easier for the prey to hunt the weakest in packs. as people are socially divided and preoccupied. I don't know what you mean. Would they touch Section 230? Maybe, are you saying that as long as Facebook is allowed to operate with impunity, they can steal our information?
Or if they share it with the government?
Yeah.
Oh, right. If they share our info with the government, then they're going to protect their right to keep doing it.
Yeah, well, there clearly is a partnership between these big tech firms and the government. I actually asked Bill Barr this question when he was AG. I said, all right, you're going to go after Section 230? He said, all of the above. Fraud, Section 230. All sorts of things. That's how we have to go after it. I said, okay, so why aren't you doing it? And he said, there is a procedural difficulty here, which is that you'd be using different departments of the federal government. Even within the DOJ, you'd be using different departments. And we've never done something like this before. That the big tech companies are a new thing. That's why they've been able to do whatever they want. And the government is not particularly good at taking on new challenges, and it's especially not good when it's benefiting in some ways from these challenges. And so it kind of left me a little crestfallen and pessimistic about it, because I don't see the incentive, and frankly, I don't even see the ability of these bureaucrats and DOJ officials to take them down.
Right on. Turk Longwell says, Tim, as a patriot, as a Marine vet, as an American, I loved the last episode of Falcon and Winter Soldier. It's about being an American, not skin color. I completely agree. I was so stoked when he was like, I'm going to wear this flag and go beat up these, you know, open borders, you know, black clad individuals who think they can do whatever they want. All right. Opossum says, oh, man, I was hoping the Daily Wire guest was going to be Matt Walsh.
I saw some of that.
Hold on. I'll do my best Matt Walsh impression. Just ask me anything.
2 + 2 = what's 2 + 2 =?
4.
Yeah. That's pretty much Matt. Yeah.
Totally. Matt happy.
Super cranky.
Matt sad. Mm-hmm. Matt angry. Mm-hmm.
I watched the Candace Owens first day thing.
Yeah.
Stay out of my way. Yeah. All right. Evil Zombie Hamster says, what's Rachel Maddow doing on the show?
Real nice. Right.
I thought it was going to be someone from the Daily Wire. JK, love you, Michael. I listen to you almost every day.
You're very kind. I left my Warby Parkers at home just to avoid
the comparison.
That mistake, yes.
I do love how they're paying to insult you, but also tell you how you love
me. I'll take it, man.
Oh, they're joking. Yeah.
I know. I either get people paying to promote my book or to call me a lesbian on MSNBC.
I love it. That's your joke. You start.
Come and take them, says Tim. I sent a chat last week re my film, 10K investment in Timcast production. Multiple creators looking for help, but haven't received a reply via Spin the UFO. Apology for the indelicacy, but had the follow up. Hope y'all are well. Pitches@timcast.com is now the email. And just keep in mind for everybody, we get a ridiculous amount of emails, and we try to go through them. But you also got to understand, a lot of people send, like, bad emails. A lot of people send really great ones, and we got to sift through it and, you know, figure out what we can and can't
do. A lot of long emails, a lot of not-so-nice emails.
Yeah, that too, yeah.
All right, let's see. The Fulcrum says, Tim, did you see Don Lemon and Chris Cuomo the other night? They straight up take the side of the cop in the Columbus shooting.
They did, yeah.
Lemon even says tasers don't always work. Blew my mind. There was even a moment where Chris Cuomo said, you can't yell fire in a crowded theater. And Don Lemon goes, no, that's not true.
Wow.
You can.
Yeah.
And he goes, Chris, you're a lawyer. You should know this. And he's like, no, you can't do that. And Don Lemon, I'm like,
wow.
Don Lemon's correct. Yeah. You can yell fire in a crowded theater.
It's fun. Don Lemon does this thing where if you look at Don Lemon from like 7 years ago, he was defending Bill O'Reilly sometimes. Mm. Don Lemon was much more moderate. And as with all those guys at CNN, I think they just, for a while, they said, okay, you got to go far left. And what do? They say, go far left. Go dance. You know, the pulling the strings, you know.
Sad.
And Bob says, 2 of the 3 people I listen to daily. Wow. I have Crowder's mug, Michael's tumbler. Tim, when will you release your drinking vessel? P.S. There's a Tim Pool Discord, well moderated. Find on Reddit. Love you both and crew. Actually, I think there is already a Timcast mug available if you go to the store. But it's, I think the only thing you can get is I made this little drawing a couple years ago of the, Illuminati pyramid with the slogan for the U.S. Office of Censorship toppled over. And it was just like a little piece of art I made. And I was like, oh, I'll slap it on something. But I do think we have a mug that's about to come out, and it's an Ian mug.
Excellent.
And it's the Drake meme of Ian. and there's an alligator underwater, and Ian's like, no. And then there's an alligator on land, and he's like, yes.
Yes. Don't fight an alligator underwater.
That's right.
Because we were talking, and we were talking about getting dragged on Twitter, and then Ian said,
yeah, don't fight an alligator underwater. You want to... Don't play their game. Don't get in the mud pit.
Yeah, like, that's true. That's a good point.
But Ian was I was like, these people on Twitter, you'll be talking about a serious idea, and then all of a sudden they'll change the subject and try and insult you.
Yeah.
And then Ian just goes, yeah, you don't want to fight an alligator underwater.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's an excellent analogy. So we're gonna have a mug of, you know.
You can drink fresh coffee out of that.
That's right.
That's really strong.
Well, yeah. We might. We'll see.
That's the old advice about don't wrestle a skunk, because even if you win, you're not gonna smell great.
Yeah.
Sock Puppet Joe says, can you guys get Coleman Hughes on the show?
Oh.
Maybe, if Coleman wants to come on the show. I've actually interviewed Coleman Hughes in the past, so perhaps. Brandon says, Michael, I've been listening to your show since it first aired back when I wasn't sure where I stood politically. Thanks for helping inspire the patriotism and values in me to join the USAF. Best decision I ever made.
Man, that's awesome. Cool. Well, thank you for your service. I was afraid it was going to say, you know. I've tried to figure it out by listening to your show, and now I joined Antifa. So, thank you, Michael.
I realized I hate you. Yeah. TWX Rated says Tim is controlled opposition. Well, I am certainly not controlled opposition, but I am fully self-aware of the issue of the shift in the Overton window and why YouTube likes the idea that they have a channel like mine.
Yeah,
I think that. I keep saying the CCP. I don't know. But I think they have like sock puppets that comment that try to sway your mind as a YouTuber or as a public opinion so that you, without even realize it, start to repeat talking points. So maybe we're all being
controlled. I also know there is a recording device under the beanie. I do know for a fact Tim is a Fed. I know.
On the
that.
Back of my head is a little dish.
Yeah.
You never see his back on film. But there's
no one's ever seen it.
No, it's true.
Yeah, it's true.
Thomas Cutler says, Michael Knowles. Ben Shapiro let you out?
Yeah.
Your stuff is awesome. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. I know I have to sneak out. Although it's much easier these days, you know. Ben is spending more time in Florida and the land of the free. Mm-hmm. And now I get to be in Nashville, which I guess is also kind of the land of the free out there. We're all in a way better mood ever since we got out of Mussolini's hellhole.
Okay. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Michael Brogan says, holy S, it's Michael effing Knowles. That's it. That's the super chat plug. Speechless, controlling words, controlling minds. Ping, ping, ping plug counter.
That's my favorite comment. Not only from this show, from weeks of my show too.
What you have done with your show and your audience to plug this book is genius. Because now you come on my show, and they're making me promote your book.
Man, that is great. This
good
is
work.
Why do we have a marketing department at the Daily Wire? I want to start getting their salary too.
Memify your marketing by having people.
Really, the viewers should be getting the salary. They're doing all the marketing. Right.
That'd be incredible.
Then they can have more super chats. It's a nice.
And then
nice
I can say, Abby Long says, Michael, now that Tim has sponsors, I'm sure he'd like to learn from the best how to seamlessly transition. Yours are like sneaky ninjas.
That's what I said.
Wow, that is really nice. You know, one thing you need to do is you need to practice and you need to study, but no one has any time. So one great way to study is through the Great Courses Plus, which you can actually get right now with promo code Knowles, get a WLES. I hope that they give me credit for an extra plug.
That's
you know, they do it by
impressive.
The read. So I'm going to talk to the department.
Yeah. See what you can do.
It's good.
There you go. That's how it's done.
What is this? Sklizbot?
That's awesome.
Michael, if you had one cigar to smoke before your time comes, what would it be?
Be a Partagas 2008 15th Anniversario La Casa del Habano Special Release. That's what it would be.
Huh.
Are those available for purchase in the United States?
They are not. They're not available for purchase anywhere. Not only are they contraband, they are not available anywhere. Rolled on the thighs of virgins.
That's what they say.
Yes.
Wow. Majestic.
It's a great cigar.
Joey Martinez says, Ian, I'm sorry for being hard on you. It's not your fault you have white privilege and can't pick up what Tim lays down.
Dude. I had to leave. One of my friends in LA told me we were in an argument about like Hillary Clinton and like the email scandal and everything. And he was like, "You have white privilege," and I didn't know how to respond. It was like I felt betrayed by my friend. I gave up on the LA.
Because you knew a bunch of facts. So the white privilege is like knowing things. That seems very bigoted.
It was so weird. I could not defend it. It was the weirdest thing to be told that I had white privilege by someone.
Yeah,
I didn't.
Do I? So, I don't know if I can. I'm kind of swarthy. Yeah, I don't know if yeah, I know. Do I count? I don't know. It's the Italian question.
Yeah.
It's plagued racialists for decades. Yeah.
All right. Bottled Water says, won't lie, and my fans know I struggle with addiction. My mom died last year, and my channel is my escape. I see my falls. I know my failures, but I try.
Admirable.
Right on.
Man, I'm sorry to hear that about your mom. It's a very, very difficult thing to go through. I'm trying to think, you know, my mother also died when I was young, and I don't know. I was like an atheist at the time. I didn't have any addictions or anything like that, but it you know, yeah, I didn't have like a really coherent moral framework, and that's a very difficult thing. So I hope in some way, you know, I do hope that you can come to not just a wishful thinking or wish casting as you arrive at a moral framework or some understanding of the world. C.S. Lewis has a good line about this. He says that if you look for truth, you might find comfort in the end. But if you look for comfort, you'll find neither truth nor comfort, only soft soap and wishful thinking to begin, and in the end, despair. Mm. So I think if you look for truth, hopefully you'll get a bit of comfort out of that.
Right on.
Good advice.
Bubbles FTW says, Knowles, you're awesome. Loved Another Kingdom. Thanks to you and Drew for that. Can you recount your argument to the walnut brains who think a regulated militia means the state should regulate?
Oh, that's good. Man, I thought we were going down in another kingdom question, and then we get to... Yeah, well, the well-regulated militia would obviously have to be an antecedent to the state, right? Because if you've got this well-regulated militia, where's the militia getting the arms from? Where is the militia getting its organization from? Especially in the case of the revolutionary era.
Whoa. So you're saying we should embrace the left's argument on the well-regulated militia because it means the government has to give everyone guns.
Yes, I like Switzerland, yeah. Actually. Yeah, that's... Wow. Thank you for the question. Thank you for the point. I'm going to take this argument way further. We need such regulations that I want like 2 M60s delivered to my door every year.
I'm not kidding when I say universal healthcare. Okay. Well, universal guns as well.
Yeah.
So we'll need a Department of Gun Services mm-hmm. regulated by the government where you can walk in. And as soon as you're 16, they've got your choice of a handgun and long gun.
Yes.
And you get one of each as well as a box ammo for both. Now, I do think there should be a very simple test, like with driving test, but not an identification system. You know, like obviously you got to go with your ID or whatever to prove who you are so you can get the gun.
But that would be racist. Gun suppression in the specifically in the black community.
You're right.
Can't have that.
Okay. Nope. You should be able to walk in and say one gun, please.
There it is. Convinced me.
You think I'm joking. I used to be kind of like middle of the road on 2A. I was like, no, I understand why we have it, but I think, you know, I've seen some arguments about common sense, gun reform, and then I had some real conversations, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I was definitely wrong about that. So long as Second Amendment exists, it must be respected in all its forms. Then the riots happened, and I was like, I would like 150 BMG, please.
Yes.
And can I get a couple of those bullpup shotguns? And how many guns can I legally buy right now? Everything. All of them? I'll take them all.
I noticed it, too. You know, when I was single, I was, like, cool with guns, but I don't really care that much. Then I got married, and I thought, okay, yeah, I'd like to have a gun, just, you know, in case my wife gets out of line or something. No, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Did you say a gun?
Yeah, well, this was the issue. Because I was just testing the waters. I said, I want to be able to protect my family, but, you know, it's just me and my wife, whatever. We're living in an apartment. Then I have the kid, mm-hmm. and we moved to a house because we moved to Tennessee. And now I'm just like, hey, here is the wallet. I want all the guns.
You need a good couple hundred.
Yes, at least, just to be, you know, just to
no,
be safe.
No, I think I'm obviously joking about, but I love how, like, these, it's not leftists. Leftists love guns.
Yeah.
They quote Marx all the time about it. It's these like urban uppity liberals who are very anti-gun.
Yeah.
And they all gloat to each other about gun nuts. And I'm like, dude, I don't take guns that seriously. I have a bunch because it's like a metal tube.
Yeah. It's not going to jump up and attack you, by the way.
Yeah.
They refer to the gun nuts and all these crazy people. And then they say things like, you know, yeah, he had a 200 round clip in his fully semi-auto, you know, and they have no idea what they're talking about, you know. But we're the nuts.
Do you think that teaching kids or like 16-year-olds how to build a gun, maybe 3D print parts and construct a gun and then fire it and learn how to fire it would make them be more likely to commit criminal acts with a gun?
No.
No, no.
Then I think we should put it in like shop class.
Absolutely.
Totally. 100%.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. There are people walking around every day with guns and you don't know it. Yeah. The amazing thing to me is that people, the reason like states like New Jersey and Maryland only allow concealed carry is because I guess people would freak out or something. But what that means is when you're in a state as restrictive as New Jersey, there are people all around you all the time carrying guns and you don't know it.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean,
you've not been shot, have
you? The key isn't, I wouldn't make it the number one priority to teach the kids how to like 3D print a gun, because I want them to have a higher quality gun too. But the real key is I need them to know how to use a gun just to be safe around my guns and just to be safe around other people.
I was watching Jack Reacher the other day, and he walks up to a car, he hits the guy, he takes his gun, and then he just goes click, click, click and disassembles it and throws it. And I'm like, see, a kid should be able to do that.
Yes.
Should be able to press, you know, pull the hammer or whatever off and just...
I felt phenomenally more confident after I fired gun. I've only been to the range once, but Luke was showing me, Luke Rakowski, how to load a gun, mm-hmm. where the safety is, how you trigger, how do you arm it. And I feel just like so much more confident as a human knowing that...
Well, you know what Homer Simpson says about this. He says that when you hold a gun, you feel like how God must feel when he holds a gun. Yeah.
Well, it reminds me of the Futurama episode. You ever see Futurama?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's the one where it's the what if machine and Leela goes to like basically the Wizard of Oz world. Then they go and meet the professor, and Fry, you know, walks up and then he's like, "For you, a brain." And then he's like, "Why do people keep saying this?" But then Zoidberg is the cowardly lion, and he's like, "I want courage." And he goes, "Oh, who needs courage when you have a gun?" And then he gives him a gun. And then Zoidberg's like, "Ah, oh, ha, ha, ha." And they're spinning and going, pew, 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 pew. Who needs courage?
Well, I think that's how Joe Biden and many people on the left want you to warn off the bad guys. You just just shoot it in the air like a Mexican gangster.
Joy Behar said that.
Yes. No.
She was like, "Why did the cop just shoot the gun in the air?" Because the bullet would come down and kill somebody.
Yeah, have you ever heard of gravity? Gravity is a big
problem.
They
think the bullet goes to outer space.
Yeah.
And then it like, just keeps going. Yeah, I mean, if it was that simple to launch things out of space, I tell you.
Yeah.
All right. Christopher Knowles says, "Michael, you and I share a name via my deadbeat grandfather. Coincidence? JK, nothing but love. Don't ever stop what you do. You're doing the Lord's work. Lord's work. Graphene for the win."
Wow. That is I actually can't, from the writing of that question, I can't tell if that was just a coincidentally a Christopher Knowles, or if that is my actual cousin Christopher. I'm going to say it's the latter, and here's why. My cousin Chris is a legendary sort of guy. Very, very, this is a guy who knows his way around a firearm. And I hadn't seen him for a while, you know, and that one time I'm waiting to give a speech, and I walked in, I was walking to UPenn, and he just like comes out from behind a pillar somewhere. He's like, hey, what's up? Hey. I was like, "Ah, man, I can't, where'd you come from? I haven't seen you in a while." He's like, "Don't worry, I'll just be in the back, just want to see the speech. See you later." He's very, so I bet it's him. He's always kind of around. He is. He's a very impressive guy.
Iron Price says, "When's the next time Luke will be on?" Luke abandoned us.
He did.
He left.
It is unknown.
He left.
I'd be reft.
Luke's motives are his own.
That's true.
Do you know Luke Rakowski?
I know. I don't.
Yeah, he's a guy. He runs We Are Change, and he's got like his own website and YouTube and stuff. And he was here for a little while. Everybody really loved him. And then he left us.
And he's gone.
He's gone.
On to better pastures.
He's in Florida.
He is in Florida, yes.
He is in Florida. Bo Darville says, "That's not Rachel Maddow." Well, you know, we overpromised, perhaps.
How do you know? Have you ever seen us in the same room at the same time?
Never.
No.
Yeah.
Just lower your voice and you can do either show. Dan says, "I just want Michael to know that I had a really intense experience with edibles, and watching compilations of him owning libs helped me through it. Also, his hair looks great." That's an amazing super chat. It's like someone sitting there eating edibles like, "This is getting crazy. I better watch Michael Knowles. Oh, he's owning the libs."
Yeah, I have nothing to add to that. I'm just really pleased.
Do you ever load up like a bunch of videos of you talking at the same time and listen to them all at once?
Oh, yeah. Well, I only watch myself. In my free time, yeah, only. Pride, of course, yeah.
It'll change your life.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like to after I record, I hit myself in the head so I forget everything I said and then watch it like it's new.
You've got to do it. Load up eight of your videos and just start
my stuff, you can watch it on repeat, though. It never gets old. It's really, it's just great. Yeah, my wife loves it.
Sure.
Play it, yeah.
The Raptor's Talent says, "Pride, the virtue, is about understanding that humans, while capable of greatness, are only capable of so much. Pride, the sin, is the exaltation of self, the belief that you and only you are capable of greatness." That's a good way to put it.
There's something to that. Inordinate love of one's own excellence, yeah.
All right, I'm going to read it. Joseph Hoffman says, "Michael, I'm looking forward to your new book, Speechless, Controlling Words, Controlling Minds, available now for pre-order."
Say line.
We'll make it. Wow. I'll, right.
Great. Bing.
I'll make it worth it for Michael coming on the show.
Right. Yeah. I'm probably like number one right now on Amazon. I'll check after the show.
All right, we'll do a couple more because we're going a little over, and we have a ton of super chats. I really appreciate you guys. I wish I could read everyone, but I can't. So we'll just do two more. Charlie in Charge says, this is for everyone. What are your thoughts on changing your legal status to a secured party creditor, sovereign citizen, state nationalist, pros, cons? Are those things? Are those real? Or
sovereign
like,
citizen?
Is that like you're declaring your emancipation from your country or something?
I don't know.
If that's what it means, I'm against it. I love my country, even though my country is driving me crazy. Love of country is an extension of your love of your parents. And maybe you got good parents, maybe you got bad parents, but your parents are your parents, your kids are your kids. And I could no more disavow my country than I could disavow my own family.
This is the best country on the planet.
Yeah.
I'm open to the conversation and the logistics of that kind of thing, but I'm also kind of like, I like this, the defensive structure of the United States.
You know, I mean, the legal structure for all its problems right now is still just like
it's
the
work
best.
Of art.
I suppose the prison system in Norway is better.
Yeah.
It's basically a hotel. And okay, all right. But they're also like, what, 8 million people or something?
Yeah.
We got 330 million people. We got things we got to fix, man. I'm all for prison reform, but I think this is still the best country on the planet. Yeah, there's pros and there's cons for everything.
I have interest in going any other country at all right now. COVID especially, but I just have no interest. I love this country.
This is the thing. Even when you go to countries that you like, I like Italy. I look Italian. Part of my family comes from Italy. Most beautiful art in the world. Good food. All right. But I go to Italy. I've gone a handful of times. And after, I don't know, like 5 or 6 days, you just think. I'll give you an example. I was in Siena. And it's a nice old medieval town. And I go to the sandwich shop. The sandwich shop is called a paninoteca. Pan is the first. It means bread. It's the first part of the word, right? So I go. It's like noon. Go to get a sandwich. It's closed.
Why?
I'm sitting there. I have a book. I'm just, okay, I'll just read. I'll wait. It probably is out. Okay. 20 minutes goes by. 30 minutes. 45 minutes goes by. The guy finally walks up. This is now past my lunchtime. And I say, oh, good. Can I buy a sandwich now? He goes, non c'è pane. There's no bread. I said, when can I? He goes, I don't know. I'm going to go out and get the bread. You can wait or you can go. I said, I want to give you my money. I want you to give me a good and a service for they don't get it. America gets it much more.
Yeah. All right. This last one is a very serious one for you, Michael.
Okay.
Lex McCormick says, Michael, I struggle with the silence of God. I debate a Christian coworker often about God's absence in my life. Might have you some insight for someone who is jealous of those with faith. Why can't I hear the burning bush?
It is an evil generation that looks for signs and wonders. It is a stupid generation that ignores signs and wonders. And a lot of people, you know, who are maybe going down the wayward path. This happened to me, really, when I was, you know, in my full wayward youth and atheistic phase. Eventually, after the intellectual parts of it, of believing in God came through, after I was convinced about Christianity, only then did I start to have these sort of numinous experiences, which you'd call religious experience. And a lot of people feel really honored by that. And it is, in a way, if you recognize this sort of semiotic view of the world, all these rich in symbols. But also, you could read it as God looking at you and saying, hey, buddy, hey, you stupid idiot. Hey, I'm right here. Why can't you figure it out? You know, and so if you're not feeling the emotional presence of God all the time, you know, okay, I'm sorry for you if you really need that for your faith. God's existence is true and permanent outside of the emotional feelings that you have, and it's not always going to be there, and it won't always be away either.
I think I told this. I guess it's a sort of a joke yesterday about the guy in the flood. But considering what this question just was, maybe there's a lot of people who haven't heard it, so I'm going to say it again, and we'll wrap up on this. But let me just tell you that it's a joke story, I guess. There is a man in his home, and the news comes on that there's a horrible storm coming. And he prays and says, my faith in God will keep me safe. And then all of a sudden, a car pulls up. They run to the door. They bang on the door. Quick, we got to get out of here. The water is rising. It's going to start flooding. You've got to come with us. And he says, no, my faith in the Lord will keep me safe. And they say, no, don't be crazy. He refuses. They leave. The water rises. He goes up to a second floor. He starts praying again. Then a boat comes to the window. And the guy says, quick, get in the boat. We're getting you out of here. We're going to save you. And he goes, no, I know that my faith in the Lord will save me. And they're like, you have to come. And he's like, I believe in the Lord. It's fine. And they leave. The waters rise. He climbs on his roof. Now he's praying. And a helicopter comes. And a guy's hanging from a ladder. And he says, quick, climb up. We're going to save you. And he goes, no, I know that my faith in the Lord will save me. And they're like, don't be crazy. You have to get in the helicopter. And he refuses. The waters rise, and he drowns. He ends up in heaven, and he goes, he sees God, and he goes, and he says, I don't understand. I had faith in you. Why did you save me? And he said, I sent a car, a boat, and a helicopter, and you wouldn't take it. What am I supposed to do? And yep. I always thought that was a great, great joke. That people expect too much of miracles, I think. They expect too much of signs. And it's an interesting question about what, you know, to me, what faith is. Because I am not theistic by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah.
No church for me, no Bible and stuff. But I will say this. I have seen some stuff in my life.
It's undeniable when you see it. It's undeniable.
And you know, someone told me something when I was younger. You can't give someone an experience.
Yeah.
And you so, can. You know, I was hanging out with these skater dudes that I knew. They were very Christian. And we were having philosophical conversations. It was amazing stuff. And they just said, I'm not interested in trying to justify my beliefs to you because, like, I'll explain to you how I feel. I'll tell you what I think is true and because I want to help you. But I understand I can't give you the experience I had. And I'm like, I totally understand that.
Yeah.
I can empathize. And then in my life, I've just seen things that to me have been profound and indicative of something greater.
This is profound. I mean, just the fact that two saltwater monkey bodies are sitting here making communicate. And I'm like, this is God talking to me through you, through your vibration in these magical brain things.
That's the thing, right? Ian, when you talk about like magnetism and stuff, it's easily just the mechanism of mechanisms of God. And that I think there's a lot of people who have either a reductionist view or a very simplistic view, and they'll say something like, no, that's not a miracle, that's just the vibrations, and it's like, the mechanisms of God.
Of all the things I've been called on this show tonight, saltwater monkey body. It's my favorite one. That is very vivid.
I heard you have a book coming out.
Yeah, only through the super chats. Oh, yeah. Only through the super chats.
All right, everybody, smash that like button. Subscribe to this channel. If you like the show, share with your friends and go to timcast.com. Right in the top right corner is a little button that says members only. You can click that sign up. And then in the members area, you'll see we are going to have an exclusive members only section. We're going to talk about God and faith a little bit more and Ian and magnetism. And we'll have some crazy, profound, you know, conversations. So to check that out, you can follow me on all social media platforms at Timcast. This show is live Monday through Friday at 8 p.m. So we'll be back Monday after this. You can check out my other YouTube channels, youtube.com/Timcast and youtube.com/Timcast News. Michael Knowles, is there something you want to promote while you're here?
I don't know. I mean, I got a few things going on. I do have this book, though.
Oh.
Speechless, Controlling Words, Controlling Minds. It's available now for pre-order. We'll see how much longer, though.
Ding.
What is it about, by the way?
Well, you know, this and that. It's a lot about what we're talking about. I can give you a sort of brief description of it. It's a history of political correctness from 1920 to 2020. It is following the leftist intellectuals who brought us along. I learned writing the book that the leftist intellectuals who created this thing called PC or wokeism know a lot more about free speech than we do and that we give them credit for. It breaks down why every step of the way we lost, in my humble opinion. And it does briefly sketch a way I think that we can move forward, which is to ditch this silly abstract talk about free speech absolutism, academic freedom, whatever, and start talking about real substantive moral visions that necessarily will include certain ideas and exclude other ideas. We need to take what the left is doing, which is immoral and unjust and wrong, and we need to do the just, right, good version of that because they wield political power much better than we do.
We'd love to have you back when it comes out.
Thank you.
And promote it and hold it up and we can talk about all those ideas. It'd be great.
It'd be great. Thank you.
Right on.
You have Twitter and
yes, that's true. I was so focused on plugging the book. I do though. You can find me on Twitter for now at Michael J. Knowles. I do have my daily show at the Daily Wire, which is the Michael Knowles Show. I also do a show at PragerU called The Book Club. I also do a show with Senator Ted Cruz called Verdict, which is super fun. And schedules are a little tough right now, but we're hopefully going to get some new episodes out really, really soon. And but you can catch all that basically at the Daily Wire.
But that's like one of the biggest podcasts in the world, I think.
Yeah. No, it's massive. I never thought, you know, especially for that first couple weeks. I love Senator Cruz. I really, really like and admire the guy. I'm just saying, I never thought he could hit number one podcaster. There's a lot of good podcasters out there, you know?
True.
And, but I really love doing the show. I think he's bringing so much of behind the curtains of what's really going on there. So, we got more episodes of that show coming up too.
Right on.
Nice. You can always follow me at IanCrossland.net and at Ian Crossland on all social media. Michael, this was great.
Thank you guys.
First
That's
hour
so
and a half
enjoyed
just
it.
Flew by.
I know,
so
right?
Looking forward to talking more.
And I'm Sour Patch Lids in the corner. I push buttons. That's my job. You can follow me at Sour Patch Lids on Twitter. Join me in my quest to have more followers than Sour Patch Kids.
We're going to go over to TimCast.com, which should be up in maybe an hour or so. But I have a feeling this conversation might go a little long. It's Friday night, and it's a really fun conversation. These are the conversations I love more than anything else, is like the deeper questions. So TimCast.com, and we'll see you all there.
Bye, guys.